Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new WinApp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 335, recorded January 8th, 2012. Is Twitter worth doing? This Week in Tech is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Collaborate face-to-face remotely with GoToMeeting with HD Faces. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com and use the promo code TWIT. And by Gazelle, the easy way to sell or recycle your used electronic gadgets from your home or office. Don't just sell it, Gazelle it. Gazelle your used gadgets today at Gazelle.com. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Visit audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. It's time for TWiT, This Week in Tech, the show that covers the week's tech news. And this week, we'll be covering next week's tech news as well. Joining me, this is sometimes we call this show, this particular version of the show, the codger episode, the geezer episode.
Which my stepson Eric thinks is insulting to all of us.
It might be insulting.
Yes, I do, too.
But it happens to go. Be the best episode Eric, we do.
Eric says so. Jerry says so. Silverman doesn't care.
So say I.
And I.
So John C. Dvorak is here in studio. Good to have you back, John. We missed you.
You weren't even working the show for the last month.
We took a couple of weeks off for Christmas and New Year's.
So did you miss me up at the you were someplace traveling?
I went back east, but we do a best of on January 1st. Christmas Day we did a holiday special. So you're right, we haven't done a show in a couple of weeks. It's nice to be back in the saddle, both of us, I think.
Tell people about this weather we've got out here.
It's beautiful. I feel like summer has come to Petaluma.
It's weird.
It is weird.
Yeah.
It feels like the end times.
It was creepy warm last night.
Yeah, we call it earthquake weather.
Yeah, exactly.
Northern
earthquake
California.
Weather.
Jerry Pournelle's in Southern California. He's in his library looking great. Good to see you, Jerry. Been so long.
Hi.
Hey. And also joining us, the young man of the hour, Dwight Silverman.
I'm the baby.
He's the baby from Houston, Texas.
I can put up with being called a codger, but I'm not going to be. I'm not a geezer.
What's the difference?
Oh, you don't know?
It just shows these young whippersnappers don't know much about the English language, doesn't it?
It's great to have you guys on. We are going to CES. In fact, right after the show, we're going to have our first live feed from CES from the preview show. But I think it's very interesting that none of you guys are going to CES. In fact,
isn't that great?
Yeah,
so good.
That's how you know somebody's been covering tech too long. They say, "I'm not going this year." I'm so
and
happy.
and loving it. It's overcovered. I did the calculation. There's 4 journalists for every booth.
Yeah. You went last year, didn't you, Jerry?
I did.
And you decided not to do it again, huh?
And I decided not to do it again. You got it.
Why not?
Too much effort for too little return. I have plenty of people there who are covering things and who will tell me if there's something I need to know.
It's overcovered.
Well, yeah. I think it's worse. I think it's just that the internet exists. You don't need to go. You don't need to have a trade show. In fact, this is... This is the last year Microsoft will be at CES, they don't need to be there. Who needs to be there?
Yeah, I don't get anything from Microsoft at CES. It's the little guys that you pay attention to.
Right.
That was the secret of the old West Coast Computer Fair was the little $100 booths where the startups were.
Is there actually – that wasn't hyperbole. There really are 4 journalists per booth?
2, I think, or 4. 2 to 4. No, it's 2, I think.
I think this year they paid a little more attention to credentials, and they didn't give a press pass to everybody who wandered up and said, hey, I'm a blogger.
But I'm not so sure.
I don't know, but I remember last year meeting John in the press reception, and there were something like 1,000 people trying to get into it. 1,000 people with press passes?
Wow.
That was absurd. Yeah, you couldn't get into the big announcements because they were all taken up with bloggers who came there and slept all night on the floor in front of the interview room.
Jerry, you're a blogger now. You can't diss bloggers.
Sure you can.
I think I have more circulation than my wife and her relatives.
The fact is they did allow bloggers a couple. In fact, they were very liberal last year when you walk, because I came in late and I showed up at the press credential area and they just essentially didn't care to look at anything. If you showed up, they'd give you a
really?
Pass.
Oh, that's interesting.
Compared to like maybe 3 or 4 years earlier where they were turning away bloggers and anybody who, and we're not talking about, you know, just kids. We're talking about real, I mean, bloggers that were important. And I guess they caused such a fuss that they changed their policies. And,
don't they have separate credentials for bloggers?
No. This last, I think
not last year.
I think it said blogger press, didn't it? The badge.
Mine said press. I went last year.
Okay, well then just say. Well, I went to an event recently.
Blogger room.
I went to an event recently. I can't say which one it was, but the badge said blogger press.
Yeah.
For everybody who was a blogger or press.
Oh.
Yeah, it was that was all you
press.
Got. Yeah,
you're one of the others. You're not.
So you're part of the same clique.
Wow. I don't know what we are. We're going to be there. We have a Sky booth. We'll be, I've said about, there's about 15 people going this year, and we'll be doing wall-to-wall coverage. We're kind of like bloggers, though. We're not really real journalists. Yeah.
Well, so. Gina's going to be there.
Is Gina going to be there? You're writing for Gina, aren't you?
Yeah.
So what happened to the bite thing?
It's not my story.
Get Gina over.
Right,
she
we'll
loves.
Gina.
She wants to be on the show.
We'll ask her.
Yeah. She loves. Thinks you're the best, and she wants to know if you'll let her.
What are you, her spokesman now?
Yeah. Do additional. she wants to know if you let her do additional distribution, so you can put like the Twit feed.
Are you writing for her too?
I'm working with her.
She's. But the name of her site is some weird name. It's like
and.
What is it?
A
new domain. And.
So she wants to know if it would be okay to use embed code. Do you allow that? Do you have it? Do anybody
for
do
what?
That? For the Twit broadcast, for the video cast. Sure.
It's Creative Commons. She can do anything she wants.
There
with
you
it.
Go, Gina. Gotcha.
She can edit out all the bad stuff.
She's not going to do that.
Just have a
that takes work.
But we'll know, too, that she edited out all the bad stuff.
You'll be able to tell.
That's the control.
Yeah. So would you – I mean, I could not talk about CES if you guys think it's a waste of time.
No, I think we need a preview show. This will be it.
Not a waste of time.
There's some things to talk about. Last year – well, 2 years ago, CES was all about e-book readers. I think Amazon kind of – between Amazon, Barnes & Noble, that's probably it on that.
Yeah.
Amazon just owns the ebook space.
My thinking is that this new CES is going to be about one thing and one thing only.
Well, wait a minute. Last year was 3D TVs and tablets attempting to compete with the iPad. iPad 1, 2011, no question. Those tablets all disappeared. And 3D TVs are still here. I'm sure they'll be back this year. What is it going to be this year? You said one thing and one
I think
thing
there's only. I think everyone is going to flock to see the 55-inch
OLED. Maybe 4 millimeters thick, sharp.
4 millimeters thick.
I'm sorry, LG and Samsung both are going to show these.
I didn't know Samsung.
Yeah, Samsung has one too. 55 millimeters, but in both cases, well, in LG's case,
55 inches.
They're an OEM panel maker, and it's not LG the television maker; it's the panel maker. So I wonder if Samsung may be closer to market.
There was a rumor if it's the LG panel being used by Samsung.
It could be. There's a rumor that maybe Apple will adopt this LG panel for its imaginary Apple TV. But thing is interesting to me is that Sony at the same time has killed its 11-inch consumer OLED, the only consumer OLED out there.
Yeah. It was too expensive. It was
$2,500.
Expensive. And if they're going to do anything with OLED, they got to get the price down quickly. You know, the prices for LED TVs just collapsed at over the holidays.
Yeah, they're nothing.
They're right. You know, they've in order to compete. They've got to bring the price down.
Well, they've got to bring the price down, but don't we all agree that what with the Kindle Fire and things like that, we are moving to an era in which there is going to be some kind of a pocket computer like I described in Molten God's Eye 50 years ago. that everybody's carrying around with them. It isn't quite the fire, but it the fire comes closer than a lot of the old ones because it's fairly cheap.
$200.
And I think that what you've got is that phones are too small for men, for what you want them for. But men's clothing don't really have anything that lets you carry an iPad.
Wait a minute. Don't you have a jacket that holds an iPad?
I have a Scott E vest that holds an iPad. Yeah,
he could put an iPad in his pocket.
It looks like a bustle, though. We don't want to wear a bustle.
I disagree. I think for years I carried an Italian leather.
A fanny pack. Oh, a man purse.
No, it was like a 9 by 13. And it would carry almost anything. And I think that one of these days you're going to have a change in men's fashions because it's just too dang convenient to be able to have a pocket computer that works and is easy to use.
I'm thinking that I think I might disagree with you, Jerry, on this. I think that the form factor of these 4.5-inch and bigger smartphones is sufficient, and they are easy to carry. Go ahead, John.
Well, he's grabby.
You may be right, but I would carry a fire. I could find a way to carry it if it were also a phone. I would love that.
Yeah. I don't know, because you don't want to hold a big thing to your ear like that.
No, use Bluetooth.
But I don't know. I can either use Bluetooth or, heck, I have nothing against a little wired gizmo that goes to it.
Yeah.
I don't want both ears on.
This is a 4.65-inch.
This is a nice phone.
I think it's big enough. This is the Galaxy
S2. Too big for my taste.
I have a big battery bump on it because I put a double-sized battery. That's for CES.
How much are you on the phone? You're never on the phone. You don't take email, and you never talk on the phone.
That's what's interesting, and I'm sure you'll agree too, Dwight, that these are not phones. These are computers that happen to have phone capabilities. Who uses these as a phone? Barely.
Let me tell you something that's going to happen to all three of you. You're all younger than me.
You're going to get brain cancer.
I don't use a phone that much. I don't like talking.
In my case, I did. But let me tell you something. The legends about absent-mindedness in older people, they're all true. But the interesting thing is that I've got this little gizmo now.
Yeah.
And I can carry it around with me. And it basically...
It's your memory.
Especially with Siri, where you could say to Siri, you have an older iPhone, but if you had the 4S, you could say, remind me when I leave here to check if I flies up, and it would do that.
Well, I'm getting the new one. I just haven't got around to it yet, but let me give you
Leo, a story. Is your fly up as I leave the place every day?
Perfect. Yeah, sounds good.
I don't think that's the kind of absent-minded I had in mind, but the worst problem with getting old is you forget names.
Yes.
And you forget names of things you wouldn't believe you had forgotten the name of. As an example, the other day I couldn't think of the name of the famous dancer from the early movie days. Now, why I couldn't think of
Fred Astaire?
I couldn't think of the... Well, you'll come down to it in a minute. And I couldn't even think of the guy who was his rival. And then, I couldn't remember her name, but I was able to punch in here backwards and in high heels.
That's it, Fred. Ginger Rogers,
comes up Jeanette McDonald, and there's Fred Astaire, and there's
Gene Kelly.
And all those names, understand, I knew the concepts.
Yeah.
I knew who they were.
But Google's good for that.
I do that all the time. Remember their name.
Google has become my brain. I completely agree with you. Jerry's turned pink.
Jerry, you've turned into your aliens are trying to take you off the planet or something.
We have to. I don't know what we could do. Can you just slap the TV?
I don't think it's. Is it this?
It's not mine, I see mine on the little screen down here, and it's just fine.
Is it this TV? Is this monitor?
It's his camera.
It's your camera.
Your camera.
Is it?
Yeah, it needs to be slapped.
Oh, now it's
really... Or punched.
There you go.
There you go. Perfect.
Well, I'm bashing.
Oh, now it's like weird. Now you got half and half. It's kind of strange.
No, I agree with you. In fact, I was very disappointed that Google Goggles... One of the things Eric Schmidt said this year was, the one product that we had that we didn't release was the ability to do facial recognition in Google Goggles. And that would have been, I just think, awesome if you had, like, your phone just kind of peeking out of your pocket. And as you came up to somebody, it'd say, that's John C. Dvorak. You used to work with him. It would automatically. And if it had the face recognition, it would do that. I think that was something
that
they missed.
It needs to work better than the face
Especially if you have it turned up too loud.
Android 4.0.
Yeah. It would be embarrassing. That's John C. Dvorak.
Well, you know how I handle that, because I forget names, but I've always forgotten names. It's because I'm I don't know why.
No, it's a thing.
And I always go, hey, you know, because you have to pretend to know him.
Right.
Hey, I haven't seen you for a long time. So what are you doing now? You have a new card? Always get it, because they always have, everybody in Silicon Valley always has a new job. They never have a work.
Give me your new card. Yeah.
And you get the new card, and you look at it and say,
because they've changed jobs.
You're at Bloomberg now. That's interesting, Bill.
Bill.
So how can you listen to this particular episode and be upset that it's called the Geezer episode?
Exactly. I warned you, folks.
Listen to what we're talking about.
I warned you.
These are tips for you youngsters.
You're going to be this age someday, kids.
Really, my point was,
if you're lucky.
One, my partner, Larry Niven, has had that kind of memory ever since I've known him, and that's 40 years.
Yeah.
He was 9 years remembering the names of my kids.
Yeah. No, I think that's normal for
smart
people.
This thing has
people.
Saved no, his life in many respects. Bad. A lot of his social... And if Niven, who's one of the smartest guys I know, can have that absent-mindedness problem, and by the way, Dvorak seems to have, too. I remember on some of our trips, he didn't remember things I was sure he would have. So I thought, well, he's like Niven, isn't he? All that's going away.
Right.
You're carrying a memory in your pocket. That was the point I was trying to make.
I agree.
Not that I'm an old geezer.
No, I'm with
Maybe
you.
Maybe I am, but the point is there is a remedy. There's an app for that.
No, I agree with you. I'm with you. And I think it's very exciting. And to me, this is the right form factor. But the point that is that no one form factor obviates any other form factor. You still can have tablets. You can still have desktops. You can still have all the various.
And people usually do.
And you will. It's not like you're going to say, oh, this is it. I don't need anything more. But I do love having these in my pocket. And I tell you, if I don't have a smartphone in my pocket, I feel a little bit disconnected. If I don't have 3G, I feel a little disconnected.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't go out without mine, no.
Yeah.
I've got it in my pocket all the time. I'm going to get the... You don't like the Apple phones, do you?
I do. I love the iPhone. I carry it for
Apple.
I don't like Apple. I don't like any big company. I don't like Microsoft. I don't like Google.
Now, there's other reasons for you not liking Apple.
I am anti-corporate. I am like Germany. I don't like them. I don't like them.
You're
one
anti-corporate.
Cut. Yes.
Okay. It's kind of interesting because until Jobs came back in 96, Apple was going to go away.
Yeah, I know. They were 3 months away from bankruptcy, apparently.
And now they're the second biggest company in the world, which is an interesting...
No, aren't they the biggest? Didn't they
pass Exxon? No, it was just a bump.
It went back down?
It was just a bump.
Yeah. So this 55-inch OLED, 4 millimeters thick, it weighs 15 pounds.
Yeah. Imagine, I thought it was 7.5.
7.5 kilograms.
Oh.
Imagine carrying a 55... It's like a plate of glass. Unbelievable.
Have they said how much it costs? How much?
$10,000,
which is even then unbelievable. Because remember those first plasma screens?
$40,000.
Yeah,
And they're the 42-inchers that Pioneer had. The one at the original show
They'd have burn in. Yeah. You know, in 3 weeks they'd be burned.
$40,000, and then it ratcheted down pretty quick. But if this ratchets down as fast, this will be under $1,000.
Here's my question, though, and I'd love to get your guys' thoughts on this. I think there's a reason more than the price that Sony discontinued its consumer OLED. I think the real problem with it was there's a technical issue. We've heard problems before about OLED, that the purple, the blue dye fades, that the screens don't last very long. I'm wondering if Sony knows something about OLED that these guys don't know, that these displays are not very durable.
To make the assumption that Sony knows something...
I know nothing.
Yeah,
you don't think that they were doing this because they knew?
No.
No.
I think it didn't sell, and I think it didn't sell because it wasn't at the right price, and right. I think that Sony, it's very difficult for Sony to sell anything at a discounted price.
They don't like that,
so,
do they?
You know, they can't do it. So I think they just weren't able to move enough volume to keep selling it.
We got to move these refrigerators. We got to move these colored TVs.
Colored TVs.
Boy, I just thought.
You do know I work with Adam Curry.
I do.
He's constantly singing.
Is he? Does he sing a lot? Are you guys going to set up, in response to SOPA, are you guys going to set up your own No Agenda Show DNS server? Is that what somebody told me?
I think somebody's doing that.
That's hysterical. I mean,
but not because of SOPA. SOPA's not going anywhere. We can talk about SOPA. I tell you about. I'm working with some lobbyists on SOPA.
SOPA's dead already. But you know that they'll come back again and now, again.
My understanding from the lobbyists that are against the that are working for the ISPs like, say that SOPA is a smokescreen, or this believed. It's a smokescreen for Protect IP, which is sneaking in the back door.
The Senate bill.
The Senate bill. They'll pass that, rubber stamp it, and before anyone – and the SOPA guys in the meanwhile say, we lose, we quit, we're done, you win. And everyone says, yay,
it's PIPA that we should be
worried
about.
We won, and then they lose.
Does PIPA vary in any significant way from SOPA?
I don't know. I haven't looked at the two bills side by side, but I'm told it's 96% as bad.
Of course it is.
The authors' associations are looking at those things, and I don't know that much about them. I was fairly heavily involved in the 1975 Copyright Act revision because I was president of Science Fiction Writers of America at the time. I don't know much. The DCMA is a piece of crap. And somewhere, the DMCA, sorry, somewhere in there, there's got to be a sane copyright law, but I don't know whether this will have much to do with it.
This is really more about just being able to take sites down quickly with at the drop of a hat.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand, and that's a little scary, too.
Very scary.
I don't know.
I wrote a column in PC Magazine this last Friday, I believe it was, called The National Internet, which is where I think everything's leading. Of course, you know I've always said that at some point we'd be licensing. You'll be a licensed broadcaster on the Internet.
Yeah, it's terrible. I hope that doesn't happen.
But the national Internet's an interesting idea and an interesting trend. It's a bad trend, a bad idea, but it's interesting. And it's
what will
read the
happen?
Argument.
And I don't in the long run believe that any attempt to constrain the Internet to protect rights holders will win. But what it will cause is a double-tiered Internet. You'll have the official U.S. government-run Internet, which will be protect right holders. And all that happens is the bad guys, the pirates, and anybody who wants a free and open Internet just go underground. You know, they're already talking about, hackers are already talking about putting up satellites to create their own Internet.
Who needs
Leo,
it?
The technology isn't really on the government side. Back when these little computers were first invented, I used to point out that they're kind of the great equalizer. Now everybody can keep files on everybody else. It's not just the government who can keep files on you. I don't think you can prevent...
Yeah, but the government owns an arsenal.
The government has guns.
The government has guns,
but the people who carry the guns are called soldiers.
That's true.
And they are volunteers. And the Army obeys its junior officers, not really the
non-coms
guys in Washington.
Yeah. No, you're right. That's why we're developing Predators and other...
Yeah, Predator drones don't take orders from the non-coms.
The generals run the Predators.
And that is the scary piece, is that you have, just like in the old Roman days, where you had the emperor who could put your name on a prescription list and they'd go out and find you and kill you. There's no trial. We've just done that with two American citizens, and that's a little frightening.
If you want to know more about this hacker,
that we know of,
this hacker satellite network, visit the Hackerspace Global Grid,
a
modular antenna grid for satellite communication, a fallback infrastructure to keep us connected.
I think the hams have a better shot at this.
The hams might do it, too. That's why why we're hams. John and I are hams, because we want to preserve the free and open Internet that you and I know and love. Moving along. Oh, go ahead, Jerry.
No, I think that what we're overlooking is that in the last 6 months, something happened that has never happened before.
What's that?
Essentially, the publishing industry has just collapsed and become unnecessary.
Well,
think about it.
But it's happened with music. It's going to happen with
But now it's happening with books and ideas and publications, and that's a fairly unusual situation.
Well, I agree. This is it's a whole new world, and it's thanks to the Internet. But I don't think it's a bad thing. Do you think it's a bad thing, Jerry?
Well, I don't think it's bad. It's just the opposite of bad.
Yeah.
Look, it's from in the last quarter of 2011, Amazon reports that their ebook sales went up by 600%.
And it continues to grow like this.
And continues to grow.
Still just a little bump.
Their Kindle sales in December were 4 million units.
Wow.
And I know my personal sales tripled in December.
How interesting.
My income, my royalties, of which I get a lot. I have far more revenue coming from all my old backlists.
I'm so happy to hear that.
Amazon.
I'm thrilled to hear that.
I am too, because you're buying, Jerry.
Or anything.
Jerry's buying, everybody.
Yay.
No, I'm thrilled to hear that. Now, wait a minute. Before we go on, somebody was saying you're doing a new book with Niven.
Yep, Niven and I are doing. We still have a traditional contract on our next book, but Niven Barnes and I have just done a novella that our agent's just going to publish without bothering with a publisher.
And do you think that if you and Larry Niven do another book after this one, you'll have a contract, or will you self-publish?
If Niven and I do another book after this one, I think it's very likely we'll just let our agent publish it.
That's very telling. I think really it is there is a huge change afoot here in publishing.
Because what happens is publishers traditionally furnish what? They have advances. Well, I don't need advances. I can live on my income while I write. They furnish distribution and production. You don't need that.
Don't need
anymore.
That.
You
copy
do
editing.
That.
Copy
your
editing.
Apple that'll do that. Yeah.
Copy
or,
editing.
Well, you can get a freelance copy editor, can't you?
Yeah.
And the other two things publishers do is editing and publicity.
And they do that
not
poorly, by the way.
Doing any publicity anymore.
Right.
The
right.
best publicity I know of right now is if somebody buys one of my books, Amazon shows down there at the
right.
bottom people who bought this
right.
book also liked, and they show about 9 others of
right.
mine.
Right.
And they sell a lot of them that way. As to editing, yeah. You really do need an editor. Now, when I work with Niven, that isn't the case because we edit each other's stuff. But authors are really pretty terrible at editing their own work. They really do need an editor. And that is the only thing left that publishers do that they used to do that you can't do with a $500 computer.
But I got to figure the person who's doing your editing at the publisher could just as easily be a freelance editor that you could hire, just as you hire somebody to do indexes or to do illustrations or cover design or all that stuff.
Even more to work for an agent. Yes, exactly.
Actually, there's more to it than that. You can sometimes you're better off with an editor you work with that you like as opposed to some of the publishers who have a-hole editors that make your life miserable.
Right.
Yeah, I never had that problem, fortunately. All of my buy editors were good people. I was John's editor at InfoWorld when he first started.
That must have been fun. Was he the a-hole you were talking
about?
John writes pearls. Yes, it's White Silverman.
It's interesting that that Jerry mentions his agent, the woman who was my agent on the books that I had done, the computer books that I had done, has become a publisher herself. She and Ed Bott have started a company called Fairtrade DX.
Oh, that's interesting.
And they're going to publish, they essentially work with the authors and bypass the publishers and do their own publishing, mostly as e-books.
And they're going to do it for what,
15%? It's interesting to hear agents taking the part of publishers. That's the agents were kind of a middleman, and now they're stepping in and kind of stopping the flow right where they are. That's really interesting.
Well, Dwight, more than that, publishers no longer have what used to be known as publishers' readers, people who basically read the slush, because every publisher gets far more manuscripts than they can possibly publish. Somebody has to select that. A long time ago, the publisher decided to let the literary agents do that for them. So they never even read anything that isn't agented to begin with. Well, that's fine. If the agents are smart enough to figure out what's publishable, why do they need that blood-sucking publisher?
Exactly.
Now they can replace them with a blood-sucking agent.
You really want, and you need to be careful. Anybody listening who's taking this conversation seriously, pay some attention to what's going on the Internet. Christine Catherine Rush has some. There are a lot of people out there who claim to be agents who, in fact, are taking kids to the cleaners. It's astonishing. My agent, my agent do my stuff is because with our old books, she sold the books in the first place 30, 40 years ago, and she takes her 15% now, which is fine. We wouldn't have to give it to her, but I just think it's fair. It's right to to keep working with her. But there are a lot of people setting up what they call literary agencies out there who are really, they are, well, they're thieves.
Well, that's going to always be the case.
I think that's been around for a while.
Why going to be the case? But you guys are old hands and jaded. I don't think you. I still see a lot of desperate young authors.
Well, let me ask this question, because whenever I say, and I think we're all in agreement, that's what's going on is a complete disintermediation, a democratization of media. But whenever whenever I talk about that, people say, "Oh, but what about somebody? You guys are established. What about somebody new and young and coming up? How do they break into it?" And I say it's better for them, too, don't you think?
Yeah. They should,
but how do they get noticed?
They should give us their stuff for free.
No, well, what I bring up as the example is Justin Bieber, who is a guy who didn't have a record contract, wasn't known. He put his videos on YouTube. He is the biggest star in music today. And he's, what, 17 years old?
He's cute as a bug.
But that's the point, is that you can merit alone in this world can make it.
Well, if you want to get noticed in tech, you make friends with me.
That's right, and Gina Smith probably.
Or Gina,
you still have to get noticed.
How do you get noticed, Dwight?
Well, how did you ever get noticed? Come on, most people got into this racket because they went to conventions, they talked to authors, made friends with existing authors. The authors introduced them to his agent. That's certainly how I got into it. Mr. Heinlein said, "Hey, I like what you're doing. Well, let me meet and introduce me to Lurton Blasingame, who was his agent."
What happens when that system is disintermediated, when suddenly you have everybody has the ability to be seen on the internet, and which is the thing with Justin Bieber, you know, there's a lot of people who are out there putting their music on the internet. There's a lot of people out there who are doing great writing on websites and giving it away for free. That's kind of the new system. And how do you stand out from that system? How do you stand out in that cacophony? That's the hard.
There is a cacophony there, because the easier it is, the lower the barrier to entry, the more people are going to do it. But in the long run, that's a positive, because that means there'll be more great stuff out there. And I do think in the long run, the cream rises, don't you? I mean, even if there's a lot more noise, we also have much better signaling systems. We have things like Twitter, Facebook, Google+, ways for you to signal that there's something great going on. I don't think Justin Bieber occurs without YouTube, but I also really don't think it occurs without Twitter and Facebook, because his fans who told other people, "Hey, if you like this, you would love Justin Bieber," and that helped.
And the downside of this is that Rebecca Black.
We were discussing Jack Woodford.
Yes.
Now, having mentioned Jack Woodford, who wrote, as John and John will have brought him up in the first place.
Let me just say who Jack Woodford was.
The best books on how to write that were ever written. Now, that's really all I need to say on this show.
I bought the book.
Leo bought the book, and I will bet you that Woodford's estate will sell
thousands
tomorrow morning.
And the reason is the word of mouth from somebody like a Jerry Pournelle or John C. Dvorak is so much more valuable than any advertising, any marketing a publisher could do, anything that anybody could do. That's valuable, because you're writers, and you said, "This is what you got to read." And it was enough for me.
Guy's been dead for 35 years.
Well, it didn't help him.
It's always true.
It's always been. Word of mouth's always been the best form of advertising.
Well, or the Long John Neble show. I remember going on that thing. It was a radio show in New York City that went on at like 2 in the morning.
Right.
And my agents, I was invited to it, and I asked my agent, do you think it's worth my going to New York and being on? And Lurton said, "Well, Jerry, there's an awful lot of insomniacs who read books." And I must have, one of the things that made Mote and God's Eye a bestseller was Long John Neville.
Isn't that interesting?
The Joey Bishop show I was on. You get people who are being already noticed to think highly of your stuff, you're in pretty good shape. I don't think the system changed that much in that respect.
So it's all a net positive. You've got democratization, lower barrier of entry. Everybody who wants to write, sing, dance, make a movie, can do it.
I've been trying to get on Coast to Coast AM for years.
I can get you on Coast to Coast.
You can?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You want to be on Coast to Coast?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, deal. I do it all the time. I'll call Tom Danheiser, the producer.
He's probably listening right now.
Tom, this guy wants to be on that show. I don't know why. That's the crazy nut show.
That's perfect for the No Agenda show.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's Flying Saucers, Crop Circles. The host of it, the new host, it was Art Bell, and now it's, what's his name?
George Norrie.
George Norrie. Yeah. You've been on it, have you, Jerry?
I've been on it.
I love George.
I was on Art Bell show.
And then Adam can come on it later.
I sell a lot of books with George.
He's more nutty than I am.
Art Bell and George Norrie.
You know what? I will call their producer, and I will get you and Adam on. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, good.
I did it just the other day. I did it a couple of days ago, and you know, you're sitting there listening on the phone as they're doing their stuff, and George Norrie runs a promo. I think the government knows all about flying saucers. If you were the government and you knew about flying saucers, would you tell the people about flying saucers? Of course not. They know all about flying saucers.
Oh. I thought,
this is the show for me.
I don't think you really want to make that much. I once asked George, do you believe this?
No.
All this stuff?
No.
And he looked at me and he said, I'm able to while it's on.
Yes, exactly. He sounds
believable. And that's what makes him so, yeah. He's the second right. most popular guy on radio.
He doesn't don't, have to believe it.
Don't you think Art Bell did believe it, though?
No.
No?
I think Art Bell was a genius at getting people to keep talking.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what if you do an all-night show, that is the most important skill.
Yeah.
Because you can't talk for 4 hours in the middle of the night.
No dead air. Yeah.
Just let it. Well, I remember you telling me that when you were doing the late-night Larry King show, the original Larry King radio show, he'd fall asleep.
Yeah, he fell asleep on me. Yeah. It was funny because I'm doing the show and he's cut. And Larry was always like to cut people off.
Right.
So Albuquerque, you're on the air. And you go right from one to another and he'd cut people off. And so some guy came on, it was boring. And the guy's asking these crazy questions, and Larry falls asleep. So this guy is on the air. Larry's snoring over there, and he's not next to you, so you can't poke him.
It's like 2 a.m.
And he's a good ways away. You could maybe throw something at him, but you can't really touch him. So the guy's yakking away, and I said, is there anything else you want to talk about? To get the guy to, because he was just already done, until Larry woke up.
And we're going to talk to this
Louis,
guy.
You're on the air.
I had something like that happen to me on the Long John Neble show, as a matter of fact. Yeah. Candy went off to the bathroom and Long John got something caught in his throat. I discovered that I'm not cut out to be an all-night talk show host.
Yeah, that's a rough
gig. I have always wanted to do a late-night talk show, and I've often thought of coming in here in the middle of the night and just doing it.
You should
now.
Do
I own
it.
A, now I own a now I own my own.
You could do whatever
transmitter.
You want.
Yeah. I could do whatever I want. Yeah, by the way, Art Bell
maybe
is on.
Just take off.
Art Bell is on 10 meters right now. For your hams, you can get if you got a. If
what's
you
he
got,
doing there?
He's he's a ham. He's a big ham.
Yeah,
he's got a massive array in Pahrump.
In Pahrump?
In Pahrump?
Huh.
And
but he's not in Pahrump.
Well, I think he goes back and forth between the Philippines and Pahrump, doesn't he?
Really?
I think so.
I don't know. I know his wife had some kind of immigration problem.
He moved to the Philippines for a while, but I think he comes back.
He moved to the Philippines. He got married there. They came back here. His child was born here.
Right.
And then suddenly he vanished back to the Philippines.
Oh, Spike says he's in Manila. No, he's on 10 meters from Manila. No, he is in the Philippines.
Yeah, and what I've heard is that there was some problem with his wife's visa, and they haven't got it straightened out yet. And given what Art Bell used to do on his show, it does sort of stimulate the paranoid in you when you think of why are they hassling him of all the people think of.
They rousted Lisa Bettany. She's been kicked out of the country.
Poor Lisa Bettany. You all know she's mostly Lisa. We did a photo show with her. She's done really, really well with iPhone apps. That Camera Plus app has sold 4 million copies.
Yeah, she's rich now.
She's wealthy. She's going out with Pete Cashmore of Mashable.
Oh, that's too bad.
And she was trying to get to... she was going to fly to meet him in the Bahamas for Christmas. She was coming down from Canada. The American immigration officials said you overstayed your visa last time you were here. Not only can you not come into the country, they jailed her and they deported her out of the U.S. as she tried to come in. I think she was trying to come in through Seattle, and they sent her back. So she had to go back through Toronto. It was like 24 hours of flying. The poor girl. I just felt terrible for her.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to take a break. I just love doing the I know where it's a little discursive. That's okay. There's not that much tech news. We're having a great time. Jerry Pournelle is here, one of the greatest science fiction authors of all time, and the man who got me in the business because his Chaos Manor column in Byte magazine was the first time I'd ever read a computer column that was written by a user for users. It was always user-focused, and that was what really excited me about doing tech journalism. So, Jerry, I thank you for being here and for inspiring me. John C. Dvorak, the other guy, inspired me. Your back column in InfoWorld magazine.
My bad column?
Back.
Oh,
you were on the back page. I would buy InfoWorld just to read the back page. Wouldn't even read the middle.
I always tell people, just go to the newsstand, read it there, and shove it back in there.
I did. It was the best damn column ever. Was it Inside Track back then, or was it...
Inside Track was... Yeah, that column was Inside Track.
That was called Inside
Track.
It was
originally Inside. When I was the editor, I created this column and put it inside the magazine because no one, this column would have never been printed by any normal editor.
You were the editor, so you printed it.
Yeah.
What the hell? Why
that,
not?
See, now this is
what I do.
There you go.
I'm the editor. I'm going to do this show. Dwight Silverman is here from the Houston Chronicle. We've got a bunch of great writers who happen to be great talkers on the show today. Dwight, it's great to have you. Dwight also does a radio show on Pacifica in Houston called Computer
Technology Bites.
Technology Bites.
Every Wednesday night from 8 o'clock to 10 Central. On 90.1 FM or kpft.org if you're on the interwebs.
And you can read them at blog.cron.com/techblog. Brought to you today by the folks at Citrix, our good friends at Citrix. When I say Citrix, I always think of Ed Iacobucci and those great times at Comdex, driving around with Ed and Gina Smith. We had a lot of fun. And I get excited when I go to Vegas because I think back to those good times. Citrix, of course, was started by Ed because of his intimate knowledge of the workings of Windows NT. He was working at IBM, but he helped Microsoft write the NT kernel. And he said, I know how to do remote access better than anyone. And in fact, he was right. Citrix also makes consumer products based on the same incredible remote access backend, like GoToMeeting. And I've been watching GoToMeeting over the years just get better and better and better. Started with screen sharing. It was a great way to hold a meeting. They made it easier and easier to start meetings right out of Outlook or your email program. You just click a button, invite people. You don't have to have GoToMeeting installed ahead of time, so it's great for presenting to clients because all you do is you send them a link. They click the link. They say yes when it says you're ready to start the meeting, and the software installs, and they're seeing your screen. But now, even better, they're seeing you. GoToMeeting has added HD video conferencing. They call it HD Faces. And I'll tell you what, you know, it's one thing to share screens, but when you're seeing high-def video of your client and they're seeing you, it is such a great way to communicate, to meet. You could turn the audio off on this. I don't care if we hear them, but this is a demonstration of it. And literally, that's the video. Just like that, you can move the screens around. It's just remarkable. If you haven't tried it yet, I want you to visit them. GoToMeeting.com and click the Try It Free button. You can try this for 30 days. Absolutely free, which I think is one of the things we ask of all of our advertisers. Go to meeting, click the try it free button, use the offer code TWIT for 30 days free. It is a great way to get a sense of what GoToMeeting can do, and you got to check out the HD Faces. I think that's just transformational. People spend hundreds of thousands of dollars. Well, that sounds exaggerated, but it's not. Tens, anyway, building these conference systems with telepresence. Now it's just, you know, it's right in there, $49 a month. As many meetings as you want, as long as you want, free for the first month. GoToMeeting.com. Use the offer code TWIT. How do you like my dog? Have you met Ozzy before, John?
Of course. I've kicked her off the chair more than a few times.
We were playing some Ozzy Osbourne. That's his theme song, you know. Yahoo's got a new CEO. You think this will save Yahoo?
No.
Get ready for this.
It may set him up for a buyout, though. This person has a... there's a connection between that person and somebody who used to be one of the board members who was a part of a merger and acquisition deal.
That's why he's brought in to groom the company.
Who do you think they should merge with?
Yeah, who's going to buy that crap? Baidu? The Chinese? That was one rumor. The Chinese search firm Baidu would buy them. I think Google should buy them because Google's getting into the content industry.
I'm really concerned about Google getting too big.
That's not going
to
happen.
I don't like companies that are too big to fail.
Well, I'll tell you about big. Scott Thompson, the new CEO at Yahoo, is going to get $1 million salary, $1.5 million cash bonus, and stock awards worth as much as, and this is, by the way, on the completely devalued Yahoo stock, $22.5 million. He's going to make $27 million in 2012. Worth it if he sells it, right?
Probably not.
No.
Yeah, so here's, I wouldn't have thought so.
Here's, let's talk a little bit about this Google thing, because we were talking about
this guy,
before
by the way,
show.
Have you heard him talk?
No. Is he smart? Scott Thompson?
He's got the, he has one of the deepest Boston accents you've ever heard.
Oh,
in your life.
I love that Boston accent. Boston accent. I love that accent. People, I miss accents. People don't have accents anymore.
You can do accents.
Yeah, I can't do a Boston accent. I wish I could. It's a great accent.
You could work on it. You could do the German. You do the
You know why I can't do a Russian. You want to know why I can't?
Russian, I think, is the one that's cool.
I know. You're egging me on. But you know why I can't do the Boston accent? Because I grew up in Rhode Island, and I spent so much time breeding that out of me.
Oh.
That it's somehow blocked. I can't do it.
Hmm.
The Cranston accent is the worst accent.
Cranston, Rhode Island?
Cranston, Rhode Island. The worst accent.
So it's like a squeaky Boston accent?
It's horrible. It's Boston accent times two.
Huh. Well, that'd be hilarious.
Yeah, let's hear you.
I can't. I have a block. I was like, oh, whatever you do, if you're going to be a broadcaster, you can't talk like that.
Well, that's bull crap nowadays.
That's bull crap. You should talk like that. You'd do a lot better.
You would. Nobody wants to hear a trained voice
anymore. In Houston, do you hear regional accents still, Texas drawls?
Texas is big enough that it has its own accents. People in Houston sound different from people in San Antonio.
And they got that squeaky one, that one that Ross Perot used to have.
Oh, I hate that.
That's just yappy dog accent.
That's just Ross Perot.
And then there's your talking through your teeth.
Dallas sounds different. And people pronounce things differently. You'll hear people in Houston say Houston.
Houston.
But people outside of Houston don't say Houston. They
Houston.
Say Houston. Houston. Houston or Houston?
Houston.
That's weird. They dropped
you'll
the
hear
H.
It said Houston here.
Houston. Huh.
Well, I don't do any Boston accents at all.
That's a Kennedy accent. That's not a Boston accent.
I know.
That's a different accent. That's either
or Mayor Quimby.
Mayor Quimby talks like that. No, that's a Brahmin accent. It's a Boston Brahmin accent. It's how the people who live up on Beacon Hill talk. I don't know how Scott talks, so I'm not going to do a Scott.
Well, he's from eBay, right?
Yes, he was president of eBay. From? There, that's a recommendation.
No, PayPal.
PayPal. So is there any PayPal is affiliated with who? Aren't they owned
eBay.
By
was.
eBay?
Yeah.
So does Meg Whitman figure into any of this?
Oh, I don't know.
Seems unlikely.
Is there any connection, you know? With,
maybe eBay's going to buy Yahoo. There you go. There's your connection. There you nailed it.
Yahoo is a content company. They don't own search. Bing does their search. They do sales. I think that the closest analog, I don't know if the government would allow
Disney.
It, is Google. No,
Disney.
Google. Disney?
Yeah.
Disney? Why would Disney want Yahoo?
Disney wouldn't. No.
Well, they went to Penguin Island. Or whatever that thing
is. No, because that way they get the kids into the Disney. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that was a scary purchase. They bought the most popular kids' website. What was it? Penguin Island.
What's it called? Anyone know? Penguin.
Chat room.
Penguin. Disney. Penguin.
ABC's owned by Disney. That's right.
Right.
Club Penguin.
Club Penguin. It is.
Fowler gets the prize there. Thank you, Fowler. So Club Penguin... was bought by Disney in the most, to me, this is sleazy, because what you do is you get kids channeled into the Disney environment, and then they never leave, right?
Right, and then you go to the Club Penguin.
And we get all their personal information. Oh,
Kill
yeah.
my sea. Okay. Sing a real soon.
I guess that worked, yeah. I was a Mickey Mouse Club kid.
Why?
Because we love you.
Okay, you guys.
M-O-U-S.
Yeah, I raised four boys during the Disney Club era, so I got my fill of...
Well, when I see Alex at Showstoppers on Tuesday, I'll sing that to him, and we'll see what happens.
Do that. Yeah.
Alex Pornell is he an IT guy? What does he do? He's...
Basically, his firm provides internet access for... all of these things like Showstoppers.
He does a hell of a job.
They do. They're very good at it. And they basically see to it that when you have 800 people all trying to use the same channel, you still manage to survive.
Right. We sit on their bandwidth because that's how we stream from shows like Showstoppers. Verizon, you may remember last year, did a CEO address, I mean a CES address, the CEO of Verizon. Mm. In fact, that was the one where they announced did they announce the iPhone 4 at that? And they said, go ahead, use your bandwidth. We got plenty of it. Remember that?
Yeah.
he's canceled at the very last minute, canceled his appearance this year. A couple of days before, Lowell McAdam said on Tuesday, this past Tuesday, he said, oh, my schedule will prevent me from speaking after all.
What do you think that's all about?
That's bizarre. Like, oh, I didn't know. I should have checked my calendar. Ah, oh, I'm sorry. I've got a dentist appointment. I can't
speak. He was part of a CEO roundtable with somebody from Xerox and Ford,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah.
It wasn't just him by himself. And I wonder if maybe he wasn't miffed that he wasn't going to get the spotlight himself. But it had been set up as a roundtable for a while.
Well, so Alan Mulally didn't ditch. Alan Mulally's going to be there. I'm going to get a chance to interview him on Tuesday for 20 minutes, and then I'm having dinner with him that night.
Wee!
Can I borrow that sweater? Because it's exactly what he likes to wear. Just like that. The V-necks. Yeah. When I interviewed him 2 years ago, I put on a suit. I thought,
fall fashion color.
CEO of Ford, I'm going to wear a suit. And he comes, he looks like Pat Boone. He's got like a V-neck.
Singing?
He came from tennis. It was like...
tennis.
And I said, I guess I'm a little overdressed. So this time, of course, he'll be wearing black tie.
Yeah, and you'll be dressed like a bum. Yeah, that's probably true.
Son of a gun.
Nobody ever got thrown out of any place for wearing a dark suit.
Now or a tux.
That's the age...
No, that's a little
the voice of wisdom speaking.
In Vegas, I guarantee you can wear a tux anywhere.
Park my car, boy.
No, they won't. Good guys that park cars do not wear tuxes.
I'm going to wear a suit the whole time.
Wear a tux the whole time. You're Leo Laporte, for God's sake.
Wouldn't that be good if I just wore a tux? They'd think I was James Bond.
And everyone's have a martini glass.
James Bond.
A martini glass with you all the time.
I used to be James. Do you know who I am? I used to be James Bond.
Leo Laporte.
Morning, Penny. Get me my martini.
Capital L, small A.
I'm going to wear... You can't wear a tux anymore because you look just like a waiter. They've ruined it. They've ruined it for us dressy people.
Yep. There's
you
a Father
pull it
Brown
off, I'm telling
story.
You.
What is that, Jerry?
There's a Father Brown story about Brown. Why a certain gentleman's club now wears green tuxedos.
Aha. Uh-huh.
There you go.
Should I wear a green tuxedo?
You look like a giant leprechaun.
So that they would not be mistaken for a waiter. Yeah.
Just when you thought we'd settled on compact flash and SD cards, Sony's back with a new memory card format.
Memory stick 5?
Yeah. It's called XQD.
Yeah.
What is wrong with these people?
That's Sony.
Well, apparently the new Nikon D4 camera that everybody's raving about, this brand new...
Is it going to use the stick?
It uses XQD.
No.
It uses XQD.
Well, that's a blunder.
Well, it also... I think it uses both XQD and compact flash, so you could have two in there.
Just put the big old flash card in there. It's not... You know.
Well, these... Okay, one reason they like XQD, it goes to 2 terabytes. Which is a terrible idea. You don't want 2 terabytes of pictures on a card.
Well,
I took pictures all year, and they're all in this card.
A full-frame camera probably
it is.
Chews up 32 megs on each shot.
Probably 40. I would say more like 40 megs a shot, but
boom,
still.
Boom, boom, boom.
Do the math. Chat room. See, Jerry, you have your smartphone. I got the chat room.
Chat room. The chat room knows all.
If you have a 4... If
And he says, look, 4K pics.
If Jerry has a 2-terabyte memory card and is using a Nikon D4 camera with 40-megapixel shots, how many megapixel shots can Jerry take before he has to change his card? They're talking about... This is where we went wrong. They're talking about something completely different now. They're not even paying attention.
They've moved on.
They've
moved on.
There it is. A lot. 24. 5,000. Scrolled off.
4,000.
All right.
Fopo Gizzo says about...
Squirrel.
50,000. Squirrel. It's somewhere between 50 and a million, I think the chat. See, sometimes your brain doesn't work so well.
That's okay.
But this card is not compatible with any other card.
It's not.
It's actually a little bit slower than the top-of-the-line compact flash cards.
You want something fast.
What is going on? I wish Sony would
Especially with the size of those images. It takes forever to load that card.
Are you still shooting with the Olympus pen, the
P3? The P3, yeah, it's in the car.
It's a great camera.
I like it.
Do you love it?
Well, I would like it more if I, you know, in some circumstance, but I like it.
Yeah. You think Apple Television is real, and will it be the talk of CES? Discuss.
What?
I don't know. It's an essay question.
It will be the talk of CES.
It
probably is
no
real.
No way.
Probably is real, but it will be the talk.
I don't think
Every year, Apple, even though it's not there,
they don't have to do anything.
Everybody talks about it.
They don't have to do anything.
They don't have
to
do
the talk of CES.
Isn't it amazing? Last year, okay, so I remember
last
when
the year it was the iPad 2, because everybody knew the iPad 2 was coming.
And the year before it was the iPad 1.
Right, because everybody knew that was coming. And now it's this Apple TV that, because in the Steve Jobs biography, he says, I cracked the interface for television.
Somebody asked Woz.
That it's imminent.
Somebody asked Woz, I think it was USA Today, and Woz said, I do expect Apple to make an attempt, since I expect the living room to remain a center for family entertainment, and that touches on all areas of consumer products that Apple's already making. I guess that's the strategy, is we're in the office, we're in the living room, we're in your pocket, and we want to be in the, and we want to be
in the bedroom.
In the bedroom.
Want to be all screens. All screens to all
Let's
people.
Start a new rumor. An Apple product for the bedroom. John, what do you think?
Dildo.
Oh, man.
I knew if I said it, he would say it. I wouldn't have to say it. The iDildo.
Remote control. I'll be right there, honey.
And so when Steve says he's licked it. Never mind.
Now, see, now you're getting. Now, I'm actually. I'm funny on a cerebral level.
That wasn't cerebral. There was nothing cerebral about that at all.
Dirty in the gutter.
I'm so sorry. Let's move on.
I will say I have quite a few readers who are enthusiastically looking forward to the Apple TV.
More than a few people.
I've got a lot of Apple enthusiasts who are my subscribers.
But I don't. I be honest. I don't. I don't understand what Apple could do to a TV that would make it more desirable than a Samsung.
Put their label on it.
That's it.
Yeah.
You think that's it, Jerry?
I expect they'll put built-in digital recording, among other things.
The DVR?
Something of that sort.
And Siri, or some sort of voice control, right?
It'll be just very nice and functional junk that will probably last a year or two, and you have to buy another one. And there'll be the Apple TV 2,
right,
and the 2A, and the 2S, and the 4.
So it's a profit deal.
That's what the company does. They're moneymakers.
Apple's never been anything but a profit deal. Come on, they have
always.
The interesting thing is they have managed to survive when they went for profit rather than market share, which strategy was what took them to the point where in 1996 they were about down the tube, and Jobs figured out a way to make that profitable after all.
You know what I would like to see, and I do think this is the future of television in some respects, is apps. I think Google TV is moving
TV
in that
apps.
Direction. Well, for instance, so somebody called the radio show this today and said, is the Super Bowl on the internet? I won't be at home. Can I watch the Super Bowl on the internet? And I did a search, and yes, indeed, if you're a Verizon customer...
What about Comcast, when you have that Comcastic thing, whatever it is they have? What's it called? Xfinity?
Well, no. Here's the deal. If you want to watch it on your smartphone, you have to have a Verizon smartphone.
Okay.
If you want to watch it on your computer, you can watch it on NBC or NFL's website. So, yes, the Super Bowl will be streamed
on
the internet. But I'm thinking, if I'm the NFL, what do I really want? I want to disintermediate all the – I don't want NBC. I don't want Comcast. I don't want Verizon. I want to make an NFL app that you pay $39.95 a year for. And Major League Baseball is already doing this.
Yes.
And that's where you watch it. And then I get all the revenue.
I wrote on the iPad, too, I suppose.
That's the point. Well, it could be on an Apple TV or a Google TV.
I will bet you that the Apple TV will listen to and cooperate with the iPad.
Oh, absolutely. The iPad's a great control device.
It'll be the controller. Yes.
Yep. In fact, or just the iPhone.
Yeah, well, in fact, of course, if you're going to have an Apple TV, you'll have to have every other Apple product, or it won't
work. The Apple fanboys are hankering for this stuff.
They're hankering for it.
You can already get if you have a Samsung TV set, there's an iOS app.
Oh, sure.
That lets you control your TV set, your Samsung TV. I have one from your iPhone, and it'd be easy for Apple to do it. If you have an iPhone 4S, you control it with Siri. You might even talk to the phone instead of to the TV, because then it can control how it can, it's a better quality for listening to your voice.
But can you make a TV that requires you to also own a smartphone? Well, that's our smartphone.
I don't think, you know, the RIM tried to do something similar, making
right. The playbook didn't have email unless you had a BlackBerry.
Won't require it. It just will make it life easier if you have one.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
What do we know
about... which iPhone ought I to go down and buy?
Get the new one.
4S.
Yeah.
Definitely the 4S.
Just for the camera.
The camera is really good. In fact, that's funny. I've stopped carrying all my pro cameras around because I got the iPhone 4S is good enough.
Let me tell you something about that. That camera, a lot of people have overlooked the fact it is one of the best scanners I have ever seen.
It's resolution.
You take a shot of text, like a newspaper. Yep. It's unbelievable.
Is there a good OCR for it?
There are a couple of apps that you can get. What's it called? JotNot Pro is a good one. There are a couple of apps you can get that have OCR. They will also treat it as a scanner, so you can do things like turn it into a PDF and then email it. I mean, it's really, it's very sophisticated. It's really good.
And, of course, bank deposits and that sort of thing.
I love that. There are a number of banks now. USAA, I think, started this, where you take a picture of the check.
I don't like that idea.
Why don't you like that?
I just don't like
That's all they do. You know that, right?
I don't care.
In fact, I put a check in the Bank of America ATM machine, all it does is scan it and throw the check out.
Yep.
They don't need the check. They just need the routing number. What are you looking at me like that for?
I just don't like these banks. I'm old school, man.
My son, who's 17.
You guys happy now?
My son, who's 17, came up to me and said, I just saw a movie. You've got to see this. I said, what is it? He says, it's called Thrive. Did you know that there's three banks that control the world? I said, he says, it's very believable. I said, all conspiracy theories.
He should be a No Agenda listener.
He listened to George Noory every night, doesn't he?
I basically said that basically comes from the foundation of anti-Semitism, the world Jewish conspiracy, and it's BS. Don't believe that. He said, no, but it's a great movie. You got to watch it tonight. I said, oh, dear.
Yeah, that's what happens. We don't like that idea.
We don't like that. You don't espouse that on No Agenda?
No,
the Rothschilds and all of that.
Bull crap.
Of course it is.
Goldman Sachs, though. Nah, you're talking. So going back to this TV thing, and we should be talking about this, what is Google TV up to? They're going to make another... going to swing it
they're
at the ball again. Yeah.
They're already swinging it. Remember, Eric Schmidt said at LeWeb, and everybody was shocked, more than half of all TVs sold in 2012 will have Google TV. And everybody said, what are you talking about? Logitech already said it was a $100 million blunder for us. I happen to have the Logitech review, which is a Google TV.
Yeah.
They recently updated the firmware, and I love it. And I think it's already got some apps. It needs more apps.
What's better about it?
Well, for one thing, it's not like a Roku box where it's another HDMI input. You know, you spend all this time on your remote saying, well, which one is it?
Horrible.
It's a pass-through, so your cable box goes into it. So it's an overlay on top of your TV, which means you'll overlay a browser, you'll overlay Twitter. You can pull up a menu, you can go to Netflix, but you never leave that HDMI, that single HDMI, which means it also would build into a TV well.
Okay, so they're going to start putting it in TVs? Do we have any TVs yet?
Well, Sony did. They put it in their Blu-rays. I suspect that the reason I'm sure there's something Eric was thinking about. Remember, they just bought Motorola, which is big manufacturer set-top boxes, one of the two big set-top box manufacturers.
Although they bought Motorola Mobility.
Yeah, they didn't buy the set-top box division.
No, that's the set-top box division is part of Mobility.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, go on.
So I have a feeling you're going to start seeing Google TV in more places than you might have imagined, including set-top boxes.
So what about the Logitech device? Is that dead in the water? They bail out when the thing is just getting to go?
Logitech said, oh, man, $100 million down the tube. I think they got out too soon. But I do think that regardless if it's Apple or Google or whoever else, that apps are the future of TVs.
So what kind of apps are we talking about?
I think an HBO app.
Why don't I just turn it on HBO on the Dish Network?
Because HBO has to give a chunk of change to Dish for that access.
Right.
Instead of that, HBO goes direct to you.
Can I buy by the hour like you can with the big Dish?
Possibly. I don't know. I mean, what kind of services would you like? The point is, because it's their app, they can decide. And if suddenly they say, hey, you know, market research says there's a lot of people want to buy by the hour, all they have to do is flip a switch because they control the channel.
And Leo, for years, what consumer advocates have wanted is the ability to buy cable television channels a la carte.
Absolutely.
And this is what I think is the key to what Apple wants to do is they want to say, here's you want a CBS app, you want a Fox app, you want NBC,
And then you want HBO.
Better than
that.
What about this? What about this, Dwight? I don't even want the CBS app. I just want the Walking Dead app. Yes. I don't even want a network. I want a show.
Right.
What if I bought the show app?
I think that's exactly what Apple has in mind.
Do consumers want that?
Of course they do.
Yes. Yes.
They've been getting ripped off all these years. You take this huge package, $120 a month for some package, and then if you go over what you did over the month, you watch some network TV, maybe one movie, and that you have the Stars thing. You never saw one Stars movie. It's just a complete waste of money.
You know, it's interesting because that is exactly what Apple did to the music industry. The music industry was based on selling a full CD of crap.
A crap. One good song. 11
and Steve Jobs went to the music company and said 99 cents a song. They said, no way. He said, you know what? You're getting killed by piracy. 99 cents a song. And they did it. What's going to be the motivator to get these content companies?
They're not being killed by piracy.
They're not, are they?
No.
No, I'm not being killed by piracy. And it's astonishing because the pirates are there.
They only wanted music.
People are buying books.
Now, you know what,
I think,
Jerry?
It's partly price.
The key is twofold. Point of access. It has to be easy, right? Piracy thrived when you couldn't get this stuff, and that's, by the way, the problem right now with television and cable is if you're not the right subscriber to the right thing, you can't get it, and that's why piracy will thrive in a broadband world. But if it's easy to get and the price is affordable. I think people want to support you, Jerry. I think people want to support John C. Dvorak. They want to support.
There was no question about it. My website is totally voluntary subscription. It's a public radio model, and it works. It works very well.
Nevertheless, I don't think it's going to be an easy road to hoe. Our chat room is Ken from Chicago in the chat room saying the second most underrated tech story of 2011, old media and cable in a fight to the finish. Cable companies are going to threaten immediate loss in revenue of studios and content providers are going to sell directly online. I do think that you're going to see and that's what SOPA and PIPA are about. I don't think it's about protecting authors like Jerry. I think it's about content companies saying we've got to control the channel.
The irony of this whole thing that Jerry and other people are doing fine. No, it's not that. No, I'm saying what people don't know about writing and artists of all sorts. Generally speaking, they don't own their own copyrights anymore. These publishers make you, they put a demand on you.
They kill you.
And they say, you have to give us all the copyrights and here's what you're going to get paid. And the next, who's this protecting? Giant content holders. And these guys never even do anything with this stuff. Yeah. They just sit on it.
So the Louis C.K. experiment you think is a harbinger of the future. This guy said, I'm not going to make this next cable comedy special for the Comedy Centrals or the HBOs. I'm going to do it myself. I'm going to put my own money. Now, he had capital. He said he put almost $1 million
into it. He's got a huge following.
But he's got a huge following. He sold it for $5 without copy protection on his website. The last time I saw it was over $1 million. He's donating to the charities. He's letting the community choose the charities that he gives a portion of these proceeds to. He's making so much money on it.
Yeah.
Is that a harbinger, or can only Louis C.K. do that?
Only people like Louis C.K. can do that.
Somebody with a following.
Yeah, but you have to develop the following, and you use mass media to do that, so it's kind of a double-edged sword.
It's true.
It's a problem.
You start with TV.
Yeah.
You start with the mass medium. He put in $200,000 and made $1 million. I heard that he got his money back from ticket receipts because he sold concert tickets.
Yeah.
And so he covered his costs, I think, initially before he even put it on.
Yeah, he should be able to do that.
I think he did well.
One of the reasons pirates thrived in the music industry was because the artists to whom one presumes the audience basically thinks they owe their loyalty to, that is, audiences don't love record companies, but they like performers. The performers and the artists were basically saying, go ahead and pirate it. We don't own it. We don't get any
steal
money.
Steal it.
And I think that is really what destroyed the record industry was their greediness to the point where they were excluding the remember the artist formerly known as Prince?
Yeah.
He had to go through that.
He wore chains. He wore chains.
To get hold of his own,
I once asked the captain. I said to the captain, do you mind music piracy? The captain of Captain It's Neil.
Oh, yeah.
I said, do you mind music piracy? He said, I don't mind music piracy. Neil Sedaka minds music piracy because he's got the publishing rights. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
But you know where they make their money is performance.
Well, you know, you heard the story about
most writers don't want to be performers. Right.
I think you should go on a lecture tour like Mark Twain and Charles Dickens.
I don't. I mean,
Mark
do
Twain
that,
used to do that to make money. He'd run out of money every once in a while. He'd make a big tour.
Yeah, I've
Leo, you know
that.
The story.
That's
you know,
fine, but I didn't. I was also doing pretty well as a professor. I like to write, and you work alone, and you don't have people looking over your shoulder.
I think Jerry could bring back Mark Twain tonight. He's the next Hal Holbrook.
He is.
Go ahead. You were talking.
You've heard the story about what U2's Bono said when Napster was first described to him.
Yeah.
What he said was, "Oh, well, we've made enough money now, haven't we?"
That's not what the Metallica guys ever said.
No. Lars Ulrich said, we want more money.
Right.
Money.
Let's take a break. If you want money, I think the best thing to do is to go and look in your closet, in your drawers. You practically have cash sitting on the floor. John C. Dvorak has an entire room sitting over a Chevron station filled with money. Did you know that, John?
No.
Filled with money because if you took...
Filled with money?
Filled with money. If you took that stuff and you went to gazelle.com, you could trade those old used gadgets in for cash. Cold, hard, filthy lucre.
Really?
Yes.
I'm in.
Good. Give me something. Okay, let's see. I've got, I know. I got a Kindle Fire for Christmas, but I really want an iPad too. So let's type in Kindle Fire tablet. We'll search. Then you say, no, it's in good shape. I didn't even take it out of the box. So that means I have all the original stuff. Let's just see what it's worth.
So what are they going to send? Yeah.
How much would that be worth, you think?
$50?
$65.
Wow.
That's good. That's a start.
Yeah, it's better than poking an eye with a sharp stick.
Let me put something in that's worth something here. let's go back here. Okay, so I'm going to add that to the box. So you push add to the box. It gets put in the box. You can provide the box. They provide the postage. How about
I have all kinds of old crap. Let's try some of this.
What do you have? What do you have
I got some old BitSurfer modems from Motorola.
I don't think that's going to have any value.
ISDN modems are worth money.
ISD, I don't think that's going to have any value.
It has value if anybody knows what they're doing. Still in the box.
Contact
Come on, BitSurfer.
I don't think they're going to have BitSurfer ISDN modems.
I got some ISDN modems, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't think they're going to have. Let's say you have an iPhone for $162 bucks.
For what? For my BitSurfer modem?
No.
Oh.
I don't think. So if it's something like that, that is completely worthless.
It's not worthless.
They
those
will
things are
recycle
worth tons
it.
Of money.
Intent for whom?
People who had
who even can get an ISDN line
you
anymore?
You can do it. You can do ISDN.
You have to beg the phone company. You have to say, please, can I have an ISDN line? Look, dude, we have one switch. It's down in San Diego. You really? No, I want it. And then what do you get? 128 kilobits a second.
Yeah, but it's like solid connection. So it's good for voice.
That's what I use for the radio. No,
there,
I still
you
use
still
it.
Use it.
I still use it.
Okay.
We have two ISDN lines in here.
You have two ISDN
and
lines
I know
and you're
you
ridiculing
have,
me.
I know. It's funny.
What do you have two for?
Because of redundancy.
One for each foot?
Yes. the funny thing is that we did, in fact, have to. You have to kind of like work the system to get one. They don't want to give you one.
Yeah, I had one. I used
they
to have
hate one.
I used to have one. I used to have one from internet connection.
Yeah, that was my first broadband, so called.
Yeah, it worked.
So this is the deal. Go to gazelle.com and put in all that stuff. Put it all in a box. Send it to them. They'll send you, they can give you money from PayPal. They'll send you a check if you want, a Walmart gift card. What I would recommend is an Amazon gift card because you get a 5% bonus. So you just get an additional 5%. They would love to buy your used cameras, your laptops, your tablets, your MP3 players, your cell phones, anything you're not using, you can get cash for it. There are 22 categories, not including ISDN BitSurfer modems. Every gadget worth a dollar or more gets free shipping. And if you so what you do is you get a couple of gadgets in there so you get the free shipping and then throw in stuff that is not worth anything, but they'll recycle responsibly. Listen to this, John. Not only do they not ship it offshore to some Chinese prison camp, they don't even put it in the landfill. They recycle it so that everything gets used.
I do declare.
I declare. That's
Will they buy my old CPM Lisp compiler?
Ooh, I'll buy that.
Seems unlikely.
Wait a minute. It's a machine that's just for Lisp?
No. It's
just
software.
No, it's a software. I got a WordStar 3.2. See what it's worth.
I don't think they're going to buy that.
Come on, try it.
I've got a couple old CPM machines, and I've got around, too.
Yeah, do you have those?
I got an old K-Pro.
You have that old S100 bus machine you used to write about?
K-Pro. You heard
it. There's no K-Pro in here.
K-Pro.
Wouldn't that be funny?
K-Pro 2.
K-Pro II, right? No, they have GoPro, but not K-Pro. You see that up there on the shelf? We got an Osborne right up there.
See it. Check it out. Look Osborne at 1. Check
no,
it out. What's the
they
price?
Won't take that. Come
no,
on.
And then what good is it?
Stuff that you have. You see, you guys are unusual.
We have a bunch
I don't
of
think
stuff.
Most. You have old crap.
Yeah, well, we've kept it.
Yeah, you've kept it already.
So they just want us to sell them the good stuff.
The stuff that they can use, they can resell.
Oh,
there's
okay.
some value
well, why don't
to
you
it.
Say so?
Like your old Canon PowerShot or your Samsung Galaxy Tab or your MacBook Air, the stuff that you no longer
I'll
use.
I'll give you money for a MacBook Air.
How about
Air?
Old
exactly.
Olympus cameras?
Karen absolutely.
Got everybody in the world an Olympus camera at one time.
Absolutely.
I've got a whole bunch of VGA cameras.
I don't think they want those VGA
no.
Yeah, 640 480
resolution. No, if you
that's
had
an old
maybe
black and white Logitech
this
camera
was,
from
this, this,
the
actually,
80s.
This can't be worth anything. But this was my first digital camera. Yeah, well, if I make no noticeable flaws, let's just see out of curiosity. Yeah, see the price has now gotten to zero. See the graph.
Oh, they show you a graph of
they
how
show you
worthless
graph,
the gear
how,
is.
How the price is falling. Don't delay. Those gadgets in your closet, they're not getting more valuable.
Well, at least these guys are honest.
Yeah. So try it out. I really love it.
Yeah,
it's
probably,
a great way to
I
get
bet
rid
you
of
I've got a
stuff.
Couple pieces of junk that I can get rid of.
John, you probably have thousands of dollars worth of stuff just sitting in a drawer somewhere.
Maybe.
Of course you do.
Yeah.
Gazelle.com. We all do. I had the old OLPC on my shelf, you know, the one laptop per child XO. And I did the deal a couple of years ago. They did a deal where you'd buy one and you'd get for a kid and you'd get one. You got two in a sense, and one would go to a kid. And then they sent me a note saying, you know, we could take that other one. We still have them. And so I sent them the other one. But now at CES, they're going to show a new OLPC. Finally, they've got it down to $100. And it's a tablet.
It's a tablet, yeah.
Well, that's a tablet.
Well, what do you mean? Oh, that's a tablet. Don't you think kids today in
Tanzania,
they want a tablet? It's got Android on it or Sugar.
What's Sugar?
Sugar is the interface that they did, the Smalltalk-based interface that they did for
Smalltalk?
Yeah.
Brother.
No, Smalltalk's great. You were just talking about Lisp. Jerry, defend me.
It's a little old.
No. Smalltalk is still operating. Sugar is actually really easy for kids to use. Look, it's got a little rubber lid on it.
A rubber lid.
Yeah. Mm. It's very reliable. I can't wait to see that. That's going to be at CES.
Oh, yeah. I'd flock right there. If I was going there, it's the first place I'd go.
Okay, maybe not the first
well,
place.
Well, it's not for you, John.
It isn't for you, John.
The whole
it's
thing
not
is,
for you.
Is
yeah.
dubious.
You know, somebody wrote an article about how most of the stuff announced at CES is actually pretty dubious. Like 90% of it either doesn't get made or loses money or goes out of business.
The yeah. Lady Gaga glasses.
Perfect example.
Right.
They were these glasses. You take a picture. Lady Gaga was at CES last year.
She was?
At the Polaroid booth showing off these glasses. You take a picture Polaroid. And then the picture would show up on the glasses facing out. Like somebody yep. would want that. Never
you,
heard.
Lady Gaga was at the show?
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah, she's not going to be there this year, but
good for her.
50 Cent's going to be there.
50 Cent?
50 Cent's
oh
going to be there.
Oh, my God.
Justin. What? Yeah, look, she's stunned. Justin Bieber's going to be there.
There you have it.
I tell you. And get ready, Snooki.
No.
Yes. I got an email from CES saying, look at all the celebrities who are coming to CES.
Yeah, that was a great email.
Well, that's some,
like, really?
That's some lineup they got.
You got that email too, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Leo, I'm going to have to
sorry I'm
roll.
Not going now.
All right, we're
going
to let Dwight go. Dwight is the Chronicle's great tech blogger and writer, and you can catch his stuff at blog.chron.com/techblog and Technology Bites on Pacifica Radio in the Houston area every Wednesday, you said?
Every Wednesday night, KPFT.org.
Is that the same Pacifica Radio that we have out here?
Yeah, it's hippie radio.
The hippie radio.
Radio for peace.
Peace. Yeah, peace.
Peace and freedom.
World peace.
And you are not going to CES either. And I thought that this you of all people would be at CES every year.
No, I went last year. I think I'm going to go every other year. I think
that used to be the old rule for CES. You
go every year.
Second or third year because nothing turned over that much.
Well, Dwight, I'm sorry we won't see you there, but you can watch our coverage and you don't have to go. See?
All right. Have fun.
Thank you. Dwight Silverman, great to have you on.
Bye-bye.
Always a pleasure. Here are some of the things that were shown. This is from Device, which is a gadget blog, that were shown last year at CES that have really taken off, like Sony's 3D TV goggles. You have this shot?
Why don't you throw that up?
You got to see these things. I wore them.
Uh-huh. That's the way to go around town.
That's going to go well. How about these? The Lady Gaga camera glasses.
Mm-hmm.
How much do you think Polaroid paid her? She developed those, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Let's see what else here. We got the Razer Switchblade.
What the heck is that?
7-inch gaming machine. See the buttons? Look at the keyboard. Dedicated OLED screens on the keyboard that would tie into the game you're playing. So it would be like a special dedicated controller.
Uh-huh.
They didn't even make it. What else here? Tablets of all kinds that just didn't happen to be iPads. Like the Zoom from Motorola. The Playbook.
Yeah.
From RIM. Nothing.
Right.
We thought that was going to be big.
Razer's still going.
Remember this one? This is the Atrix, the Motorola Atrix phone that had its own keyboard and you would dock it into. The lap dock cost $250.
Yeah.
Here's another one. We'll probably see this again. They show this every year, the bendy AMOLED screen.
I've seen this, and I've seen it, and I've seen it.
Every year. It's like they don't ever want to make it. They just want to show it to you because it gets people. How about this? Polaroid came back with instant cameras. Last year, remember
that?
Yeah,
it's a different Polaroid, unfortunately.
Who is it? Because they had Lady Gaga. They spent a lot of money to get Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
Who is it? I mean, it seems like some Israeli investors or something.
I have no idea. I'll look into it.
Would you find out who that is? LG
yeah,
Touch
what
TV?
What has happened? Does Polaroid make anything anybody buys?
Somebody sold. I think they sold the name. It's like Packard Bell. They just sold the name. Now, here's a sad story from this week. Kodak. The rumors are strong. Kodak will either be delisted. Their stock's gone from $80 10 years ago to 50 cents on the New York Stock Exchange.
50 cents.
And you're not allowed to be a 50 cent stock on the prestigious New York Stock Exchange.
There's minimums.
We got to have some standards. And there's rumors if they can't sell their patent portfolio, they're gone. Kodak would be gone. Chapter 11.
I find this hard to believe.
It's called creative destruction.
Yeah. Kali.
They invented the digital camera, the irony of it.
Remember God?
They
made more film than everybody else put together.
They invented the digital camera.
So here's what happened. They knew that digital was going to happen. This is a good morality tale. They knew digital was going to happen. They knew that their business was going to be completely reinvented. And they got into it. And they make great digital cameras. The problem was somebody asked a Kodak VP, said, you know, here's the problem. The margins on film and processing were so high that by losing film and processing, we're not able to replace those revenues by just selling
digital
cameras.
That's because they were addicted to the margins.
They were addicted to the margins.
Yeah. By the way, I want to say to Big John C. fan, you got my name spelled wrong. It's J-O-H-N. Anyway, go on.
There's a guy in the chat room named Big John C. Fan.
Yeah, and he keeps harassing me.
Stop harassing John C. and spell his name right. So they created the digital camera. They got into it. They had a good digital strategy. They bought Ophoto, remember? They had a Kodak Easy Share site. It made it very easy. The problem wasn't that they didn't succeed in digital. The problem was their business model didn't work. They couldn't make as much money as they did in film and process.
Well, they were set up for the high margin business.
They were set up. So is that...
If you were set up for low margin business, you'd do fine.
Could they...
Like the grocery business. Maybe Safeway should buy them.
Safeway.
The people who do a lot of bookkeeping will get that. Think that's hilarious.
Vint Cerf, the father of the internet, man who's been very vocal against SOPA, weighing in on an argument that's been going around that the internet and access to it is a fundamental right.
Mm.
He said it is not a right. Technology is an enabler of rights, but not a right itself. There's a high bar for something to be considered a human right. He's writing in the New York Times. It has to be something we need to be able to lead healthy, meaningful lives, like freedom from torture or freedom from conscience. But internet is not one of those. Do you agree?
Yeah.
Jerry, I'm sure you agree too, being a good libertarian.
I agree to the extent that I don't feel like trying to multiply fundamental rights.
Right.
But I am also concerned that without the mechanism of free speech, and the internet is becoming essentially the mechanism of free speech, you don't have any way to get your fundamental rights. The fact that you can run a mimeograph in the basement may have been an important right back in 50 years ago. But it isn't going to do you much good to get your cause out now. I think there is implied in the freedom of speech concept, a freedom to be allowed to be heard. It doesn't require me to listen, but it does at least allow you to make it possible for me to listen. And without internet access, I don't think you have free speech.
Very well said. So the printing press wouldn't be a fundamental right, but it would be a critical technology for the fundamental right of free speech.
Enabler.
And in the Constitution of 1787, it basically was the printing press that they intended to protect.
Right.
When they talked about freedom of speech, they really meant pamphleteering.
Right.
Poor Richard's Almanac, that sort
right.
of
Tom
being
Paine.
Able to keep a little letterpress in your basement and run off things saying the president is a schmuck.
Right.
And that sort of, you know.
And the internet's a printing press.
It is. I think a completely apt.
Yeah,
it needs to be protected in the same way. There's also, here's the good news. There's also a self-serving interest for governments to preserve a free and open internet. It is a mechanism for innovation and economic development. It's very powerful.
Yeah.
So it is in their interest to preserve a free and open internet. I think even China realizes that by closing the internet is in the long run deleterious to their economic prosperity.
In a meta sense, perhaps, but I think individuals will find these things negative because they attack the corruption of
right.
the individual.
Well, if you're the schmuck, you don't want that medium to be allowed to call you a schmuck. And that's
right.
what, to me, SOPA and PIPA are about. We love the internet as long as it doesn't do anything we don't like.
Right.
You know, it's a great medium as long as it doesn't criticize us.
Well, criticizing is one thing, piracy is another. I don't know. I'm really following this with considerable interest. And I don't think the answers are as clear as I wish they were.
Yeah. Well, you know, look, and it would be nice if everything were cut and dried and black and white, and you could just say, yeah, that's obviously good, that's obviously bad. But I think those of us who are technologists have a certain duty to try to protect this thing.
A
responsibility.
Responsibility.
Responsibility is perhaps the right word, yes.
You know what we don't have to protect? The spot watch. We could just let that go away quietly and silently.
The spot watch?
You remember that?
No.
That was the Microsoft watch.
That watch.
That got its information
that was
from the FM
carrier.
I forgot
all about that thing.
They just killed it on January.
Just killed it?
Yes.
I didn't know it
lasted. I thought it was dead.
No.
I thought it was DOA.
The server, the spot server, was killed on January 1st. So if you had a spot watch, it worked right up until... You know, last week.
Hey, I didn't buy this thing to have a crap out on me.
Actually, there is a more serious impact because apparently some of the Garmin GPSs used the spot service to do traffic information. So
Whoops.
That was kind of a bad bet.
Yeah.
But I think it just shows you that technology changes spot so rapidly.
Servers.
The idea of spot was, we'll use this unused kind of carrier on FM radio that's, you know, global, it's everywhere, to send very small... uncustomizable bits of information to wristwatches.
I have one of those phones.
Of course you do.
Go to Gazelle, see what it's worth before
it's
they find
not
out.
Worth anything.
Yeah.
10 years is fast. Now, see, see Lynn Hartson in the chat room is saying, 10 years, it was around 10 years, that's not fast. It depends on your time scale. For the internet, 10 years is an infinity.
Yeah, it's a long ways.
But on the other hand, for real life, 10 years isn't that long.
Hey, I go by dog years.
70 dog year. How many internet? I actually was asked about this the other day. How many dog years is 7 to 1, right?
Yeah.
What is the internet ratio?
I think it's like
15 to 1, 20 to 1.
No, I think it's the reverse. Don't you go the other way?
If you had a PC that was 5 years old, it's
then you go right.
It would be not 35 years old. It'd be like 100 years old, 80 years old.
Well, I don't know. 5 year
How
old
old
PCs
are, you, Jerry?
Are still use. What's Jerry's not a PC. That's who we got.
If you were a PC.
I don't think it would be dog years. I think it'd be more like 2 or 3 years. Yeah, if you were a PC, what kind of a PC would you be?
What kind of PC would you be? I think it's cool you still have those. Do you have those original S100 CPM machines that you wrote about?
That's what he uses.
In Chaos Manor?
No?
That's what I use. What are you talking about?
He's using WordStar. No.
But... I guess my original PC is now in the basement at the Smithsonian.
Wow.
They closed that wing, and they're refurbishing it. But it may come back up.
That's cool.
They
so you actually
said
gave.
They're going to withdraw it.
Which one was it? You had names for everyone.
Ezekiel.
Ezekiel is actually Ezekiel. In the Smithsonian.
Zeke was on display in the Smithsonian for 25 years. I used to tell people, how many people do you know whose personal computer is on display in the Smithsonian Museum? And they'd say, oh, no. And I'd say, well, in future, you can say all of them.
And one of our chatters says, my computer's in the basement as well.
Yes, but I mean, they have closed that wing at the Smithsonian. Whether they reopen it or not,
I do
not know.
That's historic. That's absolutely historic. Microsoft has patented walking directions that avoid crime-ridden neighborhoods.
How do you patent that?
Well,
this is the problem with this country.
It's called, they were issued a patent. January 3rd, on a computer system for, quote, pedestrian route production, walking directions that adjust the route for the unique conditions encountered by a person going from place to place on foot.
Yeah, there's prior art on this. I was driving around with my Google phone, and it routed me around a wreck. I was up
Did
in
it
this,
really? No.
Yeah. Yes.
How would it do that?
I was in Seattle.
How
I was
do
going,
it know?
There, if you look at the map, they show the traffic, the green and the red, the yellow, that whole thing. They have it on the Google map, on the navigator. And so it saw this red area on Highway 5 going to Seattle. And it routed me right down through Tacoma and a route I've never taken before and took me back on the freeway on the other side of the accident. I don't know. Maybe it's on that. Maybe that's the common route. It didn't seem like it to me.
It has traffic information. Oh. It does route you around it.
So there you go. What's the difference? Tell me what the difference is.
Well, look at all this. Look at this. This is the patent application. They refer to prior art going back to 1989 and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Look at all these. The previous patents.
Yeah, you know, these
look
guys.
At all this. This is, and then read the, I just love the language.
This is the Nathan Myhrvold influence on Microsoft.
Computer storage media, having embodied thereon computer usable instructions that, when executed, implement a system. The system comprising a search component that locates at least one information source, retains pedestrian history from a plurality of pedestrians, and addresses a, who writes this crap?
Mr. Peepers, apparently.
Oh, my God.
We clearly need to have more performances of Henry the VI.
Patent reform is what I thought you were
German.
Going with.
Come
that.
On.
Microsoft applied for the patent in 2007 prior to Google releasing its walking directions feature and in 2008. So
no, they're trying to give it to Google. Google, of course, is going to screw these guys over and everybody else in between by doing that deal with IBM, which we haven't discussed.
Well, what's that? Tell me about that. What's
they picked
that?
Up a, they picked patents? Up over 219 patents oh, directly boy. From IBM.
You know, it's interesting
because
you were
saying all the patents.
You, as long as I've known you, I've been saying, "Oh, IBM, it's you know, how could they possibly survive?" And you've always said, I mean, for 20 years, you've been saying they survived because they got patents.
Lots of patents. They're number one in the world for patents.
And that is a huge asset, and you were absolutely right.
And they have prior art on everything. So whatever anybody does, and it has to do with technology, obviously, not talking about washing machines. Whatever anybody does, IBM either has a patent around it, a blocking patent, or prior art to kill the other patent, and they did a deal with Google. Because I know that IBM was irked at Apple over various
over
insults.
That Steve Jobs picture where he's flipping them off. Did you see that?
Yep, there's one of them.
Steve Jobs walking around New York City, with Andy Hertzfeld, because Andy posted the picture on Google Plus. He says, I don't think anybody's ever seen this picture. And he's standing under the IBM logo, and he's flipping them off.
And then you have the Microsoft feud with IBM. And so IBM says, here, Google. And, you know, there are people out there who know how to look at patents for really cool stuff. And so Google has engineers and IBM has engineers. And they gave Google, I'm telling you, 200 and plus of killer patents, you know, doomsday patents that you're going to see. These lawsuits are going to blow up in these people's faces because Google's now going to have the upper hand. You watch.
So because of this,
I'm sure that's part of it.
IBM is now going to screw everybody else.
No, they're going to screw Apple.
Apple.
Apple and Microsoft are the targets of these patents.
That's very interesting. IBM can really weigh in because of the patents, and they can say, we're going to choose a victor here.
They chose Google.
Interesting. We're going to take a break, come back with more with the codgers. Not geezers, no.
I'm coming back. I've got to.
Not geezers.
I'll be right back.
Maybe we'll call it gray hair. The gray-haired panel.
You're the grayest of the group.
No, I'm not. I'm not including myself.
You're grayer than me.
Really?
You're very great. Aren't you? In fact, it looks like it's fake.
We used to work with, I'm not going to say a name, but we worked with somebody at Tech TV who wanted more gravitas and would actually put white in his temples.
Who?
Carmen Gallo.
I still run into him.
Yeah. He gave a speech at La Web.
He's
actually a good talker, a good speaker.
He is a good speaker. In fact, he wrote a book on this sort of thing.
Yeah, the public speaking techniques of Steve Jobs.
I didn't know he did that gray thing, though.
I'm told. And I hope, Carmine, if you're watching and it's not true, please.
One time we did a show with him, I called him Carmen.
Carmen, not Carmen. That's a color. He's Carmine.
Yeah, Carmine.
But he would gray his temples, so he looked a little more,
He doesn't serious. Have to anymore.
And I'm sure he doesn't. This show brought to you by our friends at Audible. Looking forward to spending some time with Audible at CES. Of course, 100,000 books in their audio bookstore, including many of Jerry's books. In fact, that's how I listened to The Moton God's Eye. I listened to Lucifer's Hammer. And they were really, these are very good choices for Audible books because they're cinematic in the prose. So they just come to life when a reader is reading these books. I'm going to make these our Audible recommendations. Footfall is also available. Jerry, you can look at all of these. Wow, I didn't realize. Yeah. They've added some more.
Yeah.
Lucifer's Hammer, The Moton God's Eye, Footfall, Inferno, Escape from Hell, Oath of Fealty, and Star Swarm. They're all on Audible. Which would you recommend if somebody's going to be they're new to the Niven Pornell oeuvre, which would you recommend, Jerry?
Probably Lucifer's Hammer.
I love that. I quoted you the other day on the radio show from Lucifer's Hammer. This is the story of a comet that hits Earth and the results. And, of course, we get blown back into the Dark Ages. But one of the things you say that I love it, and in ways this is the thesis of the book, is that nobody understands how anything works anymore. So if something were to destroy our technology infrastructure, could we rebuild it? Do you know how a car works? Do you know a microwave works? Do you know how a computer works? We've got a whole generation of kids growing up that don't have any idea. They just use them. What a great book. I love this book.
Thank you.
Yeah. So
Audible's done a good job of putting it in, reading it too. Yeah.
You like the reader and the job he did?
I like everything about Audible.
I do too.
They pay promptly rather than way traditional. Amazon, pays monthly.
Right.
Which is unlike traditional publishers who pay promptly upon credible threat of lawsuit. But Audible pays their royalties on time and in full and without a trouble. No, I like Audible there.
Well, Lucifer's Hammer is a good example of an Audible Frontiers production. So a lot of great science fiction, when it came out, there weren't audiobooks, or audiobooks were reserved for, other kinds of literature and
Blind, basically. And they didn't, and there was mostly reading was done by amateurs. So.
Not so good, yeah.
Well, they were good, but they were still amateurs. They weren't being paid to do 20 takes until they got it right.
So when I joined Audible, there weren't a lot of sci-fi titles. But this was 2000. It was more than 10 years ago. But there weren't a lot of sci-fi titles. Audible, I actually spoke to one of the guys, one of the founders of Audible, who is a huge science fiction fan, big fan of yours. And he said this was the first thing I wanted to change. So they actually built 9 studios and started recording their own audiobooks. They call it Audible Frontiers, and they've put so much great science fiction on audio. And you're right. And let me play a little bit of Lucifer's Hammer just so you can hear it. I mean, these are performances.
Even the gods themselves struggle in vain. Nietzsche.
Oh, that's the epigram. Okay, it's the beginning.
January. The portent. The bay trees in our country are all withered, and meteors fright the fixed stars of heaven.
Another epigram.
The pale-faced moon looks bloody on the earth, and lean-looked prophets whisper fearful change. These signs forerun the death or fall of kings. William Shakespeare, Richard II. The blue Mercedes turned into the big circular drive of the Beverly Hills mansion.
Oh, now I want to listen to it. I know exactly what's about to happen. This is so great. Lucifer's Hammer, you got to read it. So here's the deal. I can get this for you free. Jerry still gets his royalty, but you get it for free. How about that? Everybody's happy. Audible.com/twit2. That's the platinum account. Now, platinum means you get 2 books a month. Now, I think that's about right, by the way. I'm a platinum guy. But the first month's free. Your first 2 books are free. And you can cancel at any time, so they're yours to keep forever. So it doesn't have to cost you a penny. And I think let's start off with Lucifer's Hammer. And then maybe add The Mote in God's Eye, another great Jerry Pournelle, Larry Niven book. There's just so many wonderful books at Audible, over 100,000 titles now. And I think you ought to give them a try. If you like to listen, these books come to life. And books like these, I feel like I've seen the movie of Lucifer's Hammer. You know, your brain just renders it, and it's fantastic.
By the way, Leo, Star Swarm is a young adult.
Right.
And your kids might like it.
I'm trying to get Henry into sci-fi. Like a lot of boys, he's not a big reader. My daughter, you know, she'd come home from the bookstore with a stack this high and loves your stuff, by the way. She loves sci-fi. And for Christmas, I gave him Heinlein, Stranger in a Strange... I said, these are the 2 books you have to read. Stranger in a Strange Land and William Gibson's Neuromancer. And my daughter said, Daddy, why didn't you give those to me? So I have to get another copy for her. But I feel like science fiction is a great way to get kids reading.
Yeah, not to put down Gibson, but I think Star Swarm is more accessible for people who are not science fiction writers.
Right.
I mean, readers.
Readers. Yeah, no, I agree. Neuromancer is a heavy going book. I will get him Star Swarm. That's great. Thank you, Jerry. Good recommendation. Audible.com/twit2. Give it a try. They also, once you're a member, they do a lot of stuff for free. First chapters, so you can hear stuff. They do political stuff like the debates, speeches. There's a George R. R. Martin story, When With Morning Comes Mistfall, that's available for free.
That was almost his first story.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I remember when it first came out in analog a very long time ago. Yeah.
What do you think of The Song of Ice and Fire? I mean, it's not sci-fi. It's more fantasy. Yeah. Do you like George's stuff? I just love it. I think they did.
Well, George is a very good writer.
Oh, he's wonderful.
And if you like the sorts of things he writes about, then you will like him. It's really that simple.
Yeah. If you like the genre.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not hard sci-fi, which is what Jerry does, which is what I really love. Here's something you guys would be interested in. It's the Commodore 64 just turned 30.
They still sell those?
No. Oh. No, actually they do. There is a company they took the original forms and they're putting a PC in there.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, you can buy a Commodore 64 with a PC in it.
How much?
Don't you have one, John?
A Commodore 64 with a PC in it?
No, I don't think he has that.
I wish.
Yeah. They made its debut at the Consumer Electronics Show 30 years ago. Wow. I don't know. You know, I'll have to look and see. You can get a C64 on a chip. In fact, Jerry Ellsworth gave me a joystick that has a Commodore 64 in it.
Yeah, and a joystick with the Commodore 64?
Yeah, you could fit it. And actually, she was very clever because the original idea of this joystick was just some games. You know, it was like 8 games in one. She, when she designed the logic, she wrote a back door that if you do this, you know, thing.
With the joystick.
With the joystick, it opens up the C64. You've got the whole C64 ROM. You've got BASIC.
Really?
You got the whole thing. And originally, the guys she made it for, the Chinese firm that she made it for, they were furious that she put this back door in it. And then, of course, the thing sold out like that because all these Commodore 64 enthusiasts said, wait a minute.
I don't know why people get upset about stuff like that.
So silly, yeah. Rupert Murdoch is on Twitter.
Yeah, supposedly.
No. Twitter verified it. And Jack
Dorsey. So what? There was a fraud verification recently on Twitter, and wow. I've never been verified.
You're not verified?
No, they won't verify
me. Okay, let me see.
The Real Dvorak, everybody, at The Real Dvorak.
And you're not verified?
No, not verified. And I've asked for it a couple of times because there's a couple of fakes on there. But nope.
Well, I think because it's The Real Dvorak.
Because I know you. No, there's plenty of weird names that have been verified with the other name underneath it.
Is Twittering worth doing?
You still not Twittering?
No, I don't Twitter.
It's a good
is Twitter a verb?
He doesn't Twitter. Tweet.
It is not worth doing, no.
I agree. It's not worth doing.
It is worth following tweets because Twitter turns out to be a very good signaling
system. I got a new one. to follow. You got to follow this. Everyone's got to follow this one.
Who?
GS Elevator. Goldman Sachs Elevator. It's a guy who collects, and you have to email them, the overheard thoughts and concepts that are expressed on the Goldman Sachs Elevators around the world.
Do you think it's actually real?
If you start reading them, I read them for an hour last night. I went real deep into it. I think half of them are real.
Oh, my God. Like this one. It's sweet how my wife thinks the silent treatment is a punishment.
It's the kind of thing that you would hear on the elevator at a Goldman Sachs office.
Rules are for the obedience of fools and the guidance of people like us.
What's that one? You may just have talked me into getting the Twitter account just to
No,
see
but this
that.
Is, Twitter is, you know, you can use Twitter to broadcast stuff. And I use it for links and stuff. And I communicate with fans and stuff. But it's not really a great medium. I think Google Plus or Facebook is probably better for that kind of thing. But what Twitter is great is signaling what people are talking about. And then occasionally there's funny things like GS Elevator gossip. They're just funny to read.
Yeah, no, it's hilarious.
I'm following it right now.
You should. It's irresistible.
The problem is I follow like 1,500 people, so it's just going to get buried.
Another one that I'm...
All right.
Well, you can go back and look at them every so often, but the one I'm getting a kick out of currently is Keith Olbermann. Because apparently what I do when people are like...
Whatever happened
being
to him?
Snarky. Well, it's a long story. But when people are being snarky with each other, generally speaking, you can just ban them because you don't need it.
Right.
He encourages it. So he's cussing people out. He's calling them a-holes. And he's
that's actually a good strategy.
He's getting into beefs with everybody. It's hilarious.
That's actually a great strategy. One way to do that. So I think, Jerry, you don't need to tweet, but you probably should have a Twitter account and follow some people because you can get some really interesting stuff.
It can be entertaining.
Yeah.
When do you find the time?
Well, I'm not a writer, Jerry. I don't actually work for a living, so I don't have to do it.
Actually, Leo probably works harder than the two of us combined.
No, it's not
yeah,
true.
Well, I think so.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I write a couple hours a day, but
yeah,
I
yeah, writers
really
only
feel
work
like
2 hours a day, three maybe.
Really? Is that true?
Yeah.
Maybe I should be a writer.
Too late.
Yeah. I'm going to read that guy and become a
Jack
writer.
Jack Woodford.
Jack Woodford.
Yeah. I'll never be able to get his books again now.
You've made him a celebrity.
Yeah.
Warner Brothers will make Netflix, Redbox, and Blockbuster wait longer for new movies. This is part of that content battle. Warner Brothers doesn't like it that you can rent these movies. They want you to buy them or pay the expensive video-on-demand fees. So the new deal between Time Warner and Netflix, Redbox, and Blockbuster is going to double the window for new releases. It used to be 30 days after DVD sales. Now you have to wait 56 days after DVD sales. Instead of 28 days.
Well, that's not good.
That's not good.
Did I mention that movie Hugo 3D?
Did you like that?
Did you see it?
Yeah.
You didn't like it?
No.
Oh, well, that's what you don't have. You have the...
I can see 3D if I like kind of like relax.
Yeah, it's not the same. The point is...
You thought the 3D was good? That was such a waste of 3D in that movie.
No, it was done in a totally alien way. No, it was done. It was an atmosphere thing. It was to take.
It was atmosphere. It was background.
Yeah,
yeah. Because I know I would take off my glasses and I would see that. Well, the foreground is actually 2D, but all of the background stuff is in 3D.
Leo can't really see in 3D. So just you mentioned this before in the
show.
You
do not enjoy sitting in a theater watching a movie that's half the luminance because it has to be. For
this
the
is
thing.
Your personal
and
complaint. This does not
wearing
apply
spectacles
to,
on top of your spectacles.
This does not apply to anybody in the
like
world
a nitwit.
Except you.
It applies
it's
to
a
my
great
wife.
Movie.
Jerry, do you like 3D movies?
No, I hate them.
I agree.
Okay, well, I'm sorry I brought it up. But anyone who likes film has to see the Scorsese film.
In 2D.
Yeah,
in 3D.
I think I want to see the film, but I don't. But my problem is I really have to put the glasses over glasses, and that gives me a headache.
Hey, you know, we're going to go to CES in just a little bit. Before we do, though, I want to say hello to Tom Merritt. I think he's at CES to take a look at.
Is this really Tom?
Yeah, watch to see. He's here to watch the week ahead.
Hey, thanks, Leo. You know, let me tell you some of the things that are coming up in the week ahead. CES, it's getting together right now. They're building it, putting all the stuff together, putting their booths up. It's going to be opening up. We're going to cover it all week long, as you know, right here at the Twit booth. Russell's got the internet going. We're putting the lights up, getting ready for all of that. But there are a few notable items to point out that will be covered in the week ahead.
Tuesday, the Consumer Electronics Show officially opens. Also, Click, formerly PMA, the photo conference, is happening as part of CES. Razer is teasing their PC gaming all-new form factor, Project Fiona. That should be announced Tuesday as well. Wednesday, January 11th, the Nokia Lumia 710 goes on sale in the United States. Thursday, January 12th, it's happy birthday to the HAL 9000, and ICANN pushes ahead with its launch of new top-level domains over some people's protests. Friday, January 13th, a new round of iPhone releases in 22 countries around the world, including China.
That and hundreds of products are what we're going to be covering. It's the Consumer Electronics Show 2012 coming up in the week ahead. Tell John I'd love to stay in chat, but I got to run off to CES Unveiled, the first press of it that we're covering tonight to kick off our coverage. Back to you, Leo.
Yeah, right.
We actually have cameras right now ready to go. We're going to go live to CES in just a few minutes. Let's just see what's going on at the big event that any minute now we're going to go to. Any second
is,
now.
Is Tom there? Maybe I can talk to him now.
That's a very nice tablecloth.
So. Uh-huh.
That's a great shot.
Yeah.
This is pretty exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Cook. It's Cook.
Yes.
We'll let them know we're on in a moment, and we'll go back to them in just a second. Now, too late. Sorry. No. Now Eileen knows we're on.
Looked like Eileen.
She caught on to it. So a new board chair at the rim, but this two pathetic CEOs stay.
The double CEOs. What is this with the two CEOs? I've seen other companies. Qualcomm did that for a while, I think.
Crazy. And apparently, some are saying that RIM, Nokia, and Apple have all three provided the Indian military with backdoor access to the cellular comms. This is coming from the India IT column at ZDNet.
Oh.
Manan Kakkar says,
this isn't good.
In exchange for mobile presence in India, RIM, Nokia, and Apple have allegedly provided backdoor access for the Indian intelligence to spy on communications.
Nobody talks much about Indian intelligence, but those guys are rough customers.
So pretty sharp, too. At least they used to be.
Interesting. You know, we haven't talked about this, and it's really more politics than technology, but what do you think of the National Defense Authorization Act?
Terrible.
I'm just scared to death that the U.S. government can now jail anybody indefinitely without trial.
Military. It's a militarization of the country. And here's the kicker that people have not talked about, which has been discussed on the No Agenda Show.
NoAgendaShow.com.
Another law that was passed by executive order that can take your citizenship away at the drop of a hat by essentially a kangaroo court, and then you're not an American citizen anymore, and you can be jailed at Gitmo. This will be available to people who are on the newsletter.
And for people who say, oh, well, the government wouldn't do that, what do you think, Jerry Brunell?
What's the point of saying that? What's the point of doing it?
Well, I think the courts have yet to be heard from.
Yeah, well, I think that hopefully the courts will do something.
I do believe
this.
Habeas corpus is enshrined in the United States Constitution.
Well, take a look at the Patriot Act and tell me what they've done about that so far.
It does not. The Patriot Act hasn't eliminated habeas corpus. Lincoln eliminated habeas corpus for a while, but he was sharply restricted in his ability to do it even then. So I'm not. I worry about such things. I do indeed, and I particularly don't like the notion of being able to put people on prescription lists and just go kill them without any trial or anything else.
It's fine. It's fine if you have a benign government, but the minute who knows who gets elected?
There is no such thing, Leo, as a benign government, because governments are always filled with people. That was one of the first things that they understood in the Convention of 1787. Is that you don't hand things over to arbitrary power just because you think this is a good guy.
Right. I agree 100%.
It's always filled with people.
Greedy.
And let me go further. Purnell's iron law. There are two kinds of organizations in this world. I mean, the two kinds of people in this world who are in organizations. In every organization, there are people who are devoted to the principles that the organization was founded for, like good classroom teachers and so forth. And there are people who are devoted to the organization itself, like school administrators and so forth. And the iron law is the second group always gets in control.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
It'll happen the same with government.
The bureaucrats always win.
Yeah.
This seems so minor compared with the right to jail somebody indefinitely without trial. But the government also claims they can close any Twitter account. It doesn't seem... Well, I should have done that first.
We have not heard...
There's some Twitter accounts they should close.
Twitter is fighting this, and I praise
good
Twitter.
For them.
Joe Lieberman contacted Twitter to remove two, quote, propaganda accounts run by the Taliban. Turns out the Taliban is not an illegal organization.
They're setting up shop in Qatar with their offices now.
It's not illegal in the United States.
You can get an appointment with the Taliban. Can you imagine? Hey, I'd like to have a meeting.
Well, I'm not crazy about them, but they're not an illegal. They're not Al-Qaeda. An Israeli law firm threatened to sue Twitter if they didn't remove accounts run by Hezbollah. In the New York Times, an anonymous U.S. official said they, quote, may have the legal authority to demand that Twitter close a Twitter account associated with the militant Somali group. It's actually an interesting.
The pirates?
No.
I think it should be a pirate group.
Al-Shabaab.
Al-Shabaab. Those guys are bad.
They should be pirates.
Hey, now maybe the pirates could get together with the entertainment pirates and have
now you're talking.
We should have Somali pirates run the Pirate Bay.
We should have a convention.
We keep our servers on captured ships that are anchored off of the coast of Somalia and
pirate radio.
So the football game's over.
Who won?
Denver.
You're kidding.
Denver.
The Steelers lost?
Yes.
Who would have thunk it?
And they won in overtime with an 80-yard bomb from Tebow.
I'm sorry I missed this.
But the weird thing about it, the game was in control by Denver except from most of the game. They were kicking their butts.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Well, if any bettors out there, you made out on this one.
What was the spread?
I think they were underdogs by 10 points or something like that. And they won 29-23.
Let me ask, and then we're going to wrap this up. I know you're both ardent Republicans. If you,
I'm an independent.
Are you?
I hate to tell you that.
No, I know you are. I'm just teasing you.
But I do like Ron Paul.
Ron Paul, are you a Ron Paul supporter? I'm just asking.
Yes.
Okay, Jerry, do you have a horse in this race?
I go along with the notion that anybody on that stage has got to be better than what we have, but that's my personal view. You all know that Newt Gingrich is a very old friend of mine.
I did not know that.
The first time I ever met Newt was my phone rang in 1980 or thereabouts. And this voice said, this is Newt Gingrich. I'd never heard of him. He had read my book A Step Farther Out, and he had called the publisher and got my name and phone number and called me to talk about it. Now, I haven't had too many congressmen want to call up and discuss concepts of science and so forth. So I was kind of his science advisor up to the time he became speaker.
Wow.
So Newt's a personal friend. And
you'd make out like a bandit if he was president.
Well,
we all would.
No,
I think Jerry should have a seat in the cabinet. We can make him the Minister of Space.
Actually, what I would like to see is Newt as a Postmaster General. And don't laugh. I meant by that the way the Postmaster General used to be, which was the fifth-ranking cabinet officer.
Really?
And he basically was the minister without portfolio. That was traditionally, for a long time in this country, the Postmaster General was the chief advisor to the president.
What?
He wasn't expected to run the post office.
Well, I think somebody running the post office isn't a bad idea either.
The post office is
Roosevelt
a mess.
Roosevelt used the Postmaster General office that way. I'd love to see Newt in that office.
Newt situation. Gingrich for Postmaster General.
I understand that sounds ridiculous.
He's
now,
a smart man. There's no doubt about that.
As somebody you have to listen to.
Yeah, he's a smart man.
He's a good debater.
The problem with Newt is that
he is a
Well, not only Master Newt's problem is that he surrounds himself with smart people, so he doesn't mind saying something that's fairly silly on the grounds that the people around him are going to say, Newt, you're crazy.
Uh-huh.
And
by the way, they are saying that, I think, as a matter of fact.
He does that every now and then. He does say silly things.
Yeah.
And he basically expects his friends to correct him for it. But it sure as hell gets out in public that, oh, Newt just did something stupid. Well, probably.
The truth is, I like your idea because I do think Newt is a brilliant guy and probably would bring a lot of interesting thoughts and ideas to the table. But I don't think he should be an administrator, but make him a postmaster general. Well, so he has a minister with that portfolio.
Those days are over.
They're gone.
Yeah, those days are over, but there are posts like that still. You will understand that while Newt has no administrative experience as such, except for once, as the Speaker of the House, he did reorganize the architect of the Capitol's office, and he actually made it work. He managed to get the Capitol building back under decent management when he was Speaker. That's not generally known.
Interesting.
So he does have some. Now, that's not a lot of executive experience.
Right.
That is his, of course.
I don't think Newt should be in charge of anything.
Yeah. I'm not pushing him for
being. He's not going to be either, so I wouldn't worry about it.
I'll grant you that.
I don't think he will be elected.
But you're right. I'm not sure who should be in charge.
Selectable.
Jerry Pournelle is the greatest. I just love having you on the show, and I don't know why we've been so long without you. Come back real soon.
All right.
You're the best.
I'll be glad to.
JerryPournelle.com. That's the place if you want people to go to buy your stuff, to see your writing and all of that stuff. Yes?
Yes.
Yes.
JerryPournelle.com. That's where I do a sort of mostly daily commentary. And
I can't wait to see
tell you where to find everything else.
Is there any ETA for the new book?
I'm still working on it. It's essentially a fairy tale on how to run the country right.
Is it a political book?
Let's say that if there's a big threat to the earth from a black comet coming and the military has got to do something about it and you got 20 or 30 years, one of the things that you have to do is make sure there's a continuing supply of people who know what they're doing. Steve Jobs famously said that the reason he didn't make Apple computers in the United States is because there weren't enough quality control engineers and the kind of skilled people that he thought you needed to do it. Now, that may or may not be correct, but it would be correct in the case that we're doing. So we're doing basically a fairy tale. If you had to run the country with a disaster coming, what would you do to reform the schools?
Interesting.
Just make everything different. Now, that's a fairy tale.
All great science fiction starts with a premise and then runs with it, and I can't wait to read it. It sounds great. Do you have a name for it yet?
Lucifer's Anvil is the work. The working
title. So it's kind of.
We may or may not change that.
I like that.
Look, the most lucrative thing I ever did in my life was he hit the earth with something great big. So we've done it twice, and we made a lot of money each time, so I thought it's probably time to do it again.
If it works, do it again. I think Woodford said that, right?
Maybe.
John C. Dvorak is at Channel Dvorak, and of course he's the host with Adam Curry at the No Agenda Show every Sunday morning.
And Thursdays,
too. And you also do the
X3 show. PC Magazine column.
You still do the PC Magazine? Why do you even bother with that?
I do the column.
There isn't even any print anymore.
Every day of the week I write a column for PC Magazine.
You do?
Yeah.
Lord, you work harder than I do.
Lord.
I got nothing else to do but write and research.
John will be back soon. We asked John to be on every show, but he has a limit.
I don't have a limit. It's a long drive.
There's only so much you can take.
When the weather's like this, I love coming up here.
Thanks for being here, John. And thanks also to Dwight Silverman, who had to leave early at the Houston Chronicle blog.tech.com/techblog. We are going to go live now to CES coverage. We will be back. Our schedule is a little different. I encourage you to go to inside.twit.tv. to see what the schedule will be this week. We're doing security now at 9 a.m. on Monday, and this week in Google, 11 a.m. on Monday, both times Pacific, so that we can get those shows in the can before I head to Vegas. We will have nonstop coverage of CES beginning Tuesday, but we are going to be there tonight and tomorrow night. And we are also doing something we haven't done before. We are going to live stream Steve Ballmer's last keynote at CES, because I'm of the opinion that Microsoft is going to go out with a bang.
Is he going to come out of a cake?
I said he'd fly in on a wire.
That could be. It's risky.
Didn't he do that once and then got stuck? I don't. Maybe that was
a bad
dream.
I think you're thinking of
somebody did that.
Some rock and roll singer.
Anyway, we will. That starts at 6:30 p.m. Pacific tomorrow, and we are going to have commentary from our Windows Weekly hosts Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott, as Ballmer does the last Microsoft keynote at CES. So that should be something worth watching. Lots of CES coverage coming up. We'll be back next week here in studio with Twit, as always, Sundays, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on twit.tv. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you at CES. Another Twit is in the can.
This is amazing.